Hey, Project Big Screen listeners, you can find us every Monday on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or YouTube. Prime members can listen ad-free on Amazon Music.
What happens when you lock 18 coworkers in an office for 1 week to compete for $250,000 of cash? This is Surviving Barstool Season 5, presented by Rumble Premium. Each episode released 3 hours early, so get it ad-free before anyone else, only when you join Rumble Premium. Surviving Barstool premieres Sunday, August 9th at 5 p.m. on Rumble Premium, and everywhere else at 8 p.m.
.336, Jeff Lowe, Ken Jack, Trobe Owens.
We're in studio again, so we sound very crispy and buttery. Crispy
except to the one person who needs to hear us the most. We sound horrible.
That's okay. It's just like, you know, it's like every work conference call pre-2018 all sounded like that. Like all dialed a go-to meeting and the audio quality sucked. It's a good times. Good times, fellas. What's going on with you all?
Not much. We have I Care a Lot today and Silk Road, which we liked I Care, which actually I Care a Lot is an incredibly probably the most polarizing movie we've talked about since Uncut Gems.
Reaction is insane.
Yeah, so we will talk about that. But I'm light years more excited to talk about the Silk Road. I can't stop thinking about Silk Road. It's so bad. No interviews today. We have an interview next week with Frank Grillo, though.
We do.
So that's cool. Also,
he's very cool.
A bracket tonight. Also, all of our interviews are going to start going up on YouTube, so the full videos are going to go up on YouTube. We may get the pod up there eventually, but right now interviews, since we have so many, we're going to get those up on YouTube. We also might have a massive interview in the next couple weeks.
Yes.
Like, huge, huge fucking interview.
Outside of the Russo brothers, it will be, I think, our most famous interview.
And in terms of timing, I think that's what makes it. But it's not set yet, so don't get your hopes up. In terms of timing, though... Yeah, would be fucking massive. Anyway, so that's that. So you'll get to hear all that shit from us tonight. Let me do an ad read quick. Roman, pop off right here. See, you'd think Roman that'd be the last longer ad read. They want us to read it longer in the episode, but no, they're up first. Roman swipes, clinically proven way to last longer in bed. They're effective, easy to use, fast acting, and don't require a prescription. And Roman can ship you those swipe soaks in discreet, unmarked packaging, and each swipe pack is small enough to hide in your pocket from wherever you need it. So if you are trying to last longer in bed, Roman swipes is the way to go. Easy to use. Take it out of the packet, swipe it on, let it dry, and then that's it. You're good to go. Get Roman, GetRoman.com/lights. You can get your first month of swipes for just $5 when you choose a monthly plan. That's GetRoman.com/lights. Trill, speak, my friend. What's up with you?
Why?
Who are you?
Oh, no. Let's talk about NBA Top Shot, this thing you guys have been talking about.
See, we talk about it so much in the office that like, I almost don't want to, but now I do, because talking about it with you makes it, yeah.
So you buy highlights, and then you don't really own the highlights? Like, you just kind of, like, you have the highlight, right? But you don't own it in the sense that you couldn't just go and like broadcast the highlight, right?
Right. Neither of us are in it, are doing it.
No.
I almost got in, but it's very hard to get. I almost got in at the right time and I didn't. And I don't have like fear of miss, like so FOMO, as the kids say. We should use really like cool internet slang in honor of Silk Road today.
True.
I don't have much of that because it's like if I had bought in on Bitcoin and then sold out like 8 years ago, I'd probably be pretty fucking bummed. This one, like, yeah, I could have made a cool penny like 2 weeks ago or whatever when I was told about this. But no, we're not in it. But you are right. You don't really It's I don't know. It's the novelty. I don't know. It's weird.
It reminds me almost of you know how people kind of trade with the what's the NBA card game thing that they do on 2K, like the Ultimate Team shit. It almost reminds me a little bit of that. It's not the same, but like it gives me that same sort of vibe, except the alternate thing it highlights here.
You get a utility out of that, though, right? You can play with those players on your team. But I mean, look, I go on and off like buying shoes, right? So I'm not one to speak in terms of deeming somebody's purchase and collection habits. I don't really understand it because you don't own, like with a shoe, you've got a shoe.
But you're not purchasing that with the purpose of reselling usually, right?
I mean, sometimes you are.
Well, you specifically rather, I mean.
No, but the thing is like it's this whole market that's built off of like everyone buying just so they can resell.
It's the NFT market. I mean, it's Bitcoin. Which is funny because we're talking about Silk Road tonight, which is it's like Bitcoin the movie almost. Like, but yeah, I mean, I don't know. Like, it is. I have a hard time. Like, I for some reason just kind of, I kind of get it in my head, but I have a hard time explaining it, which maybe means I don't get it. Right.
I'm just gonna chalk it up to the fact that I'm old. That's what I'm gonna do. I'm just old. I don't get it. I'm not gonna make any judgments on people who do it. Because you know, if it brings people happiness, if they enjoy the speculative market of NBA highlight ownership, then who am I to judge?
Well, sure. you also do it to us because that's the other thing. Like making the money is why it's popular here.
Yeah.
Like no one's sitting here talking about like bragging about the highlight they own. They're just talking about the money they're making. It's the chase, right?
Yeah, but is the money real? Is what I'm trying to get at. Well, if like all the demand
is
for
any
it
money
is,
real, really?
Yeah. Well, good point. But if all the demand for it is based off of like speculation, driven by you know flipping them, then who are the buyers? I mean, I guess is it just like people? I mean, is it like the stock market where it's just people who think it's going to go higher? I don't know.
It's an interesting convergence of the NFT craze, which is not a new thing. It's not like these just got invented. Yeah, but it's that and the fact that cards are in a boom right now as well because of quarantine and COVID. Because obviously the card business has speaking of resurgence, like that resurgence is nuts. So it's kind of a mix of that, I guess. Like I get it, but I have like a weird, a hard time explaining it. Also, the cash out was 30 days, I think, and so that's the joke going around the office. People are like, yeah, I've made X amount of money, and then they're like, all right, well, let me know if you actually get that in 30 days.
Yeah, exactly.
Let's see what that looks like. Hit the cash out button now. Let's see what it looks like in 30 days.
Dude, what's the coolest highlight on there? Like, what's the thing.
Some of the most expensive ones aren't even crazy.
What's the Upper Deck Ken Griffey Jr. of the...
Yeah, some of the ones that were near the top were not particularly.
There was like a $15,000 Steph Curry highlight, and it was just a random three from last week.
Mm-hmm.
But I think a lot of it is serial numbers and value. So it's like, you know, you'll get one highlight, there's only 100 of them, right? That's like a regular trading card, you know?
They have, I don't know, like they have ones that are like, you know, some cards, like back in the day, I think it was... they used to have like refractor cards, which were shiny. Yeah, I think the Pokemon had that too.
Yeah, yeah. Oh yeah, like, holographic cards like Charizard.
Yeah, do they have highlights that are like sepia filtered? They're like special.
Sepia filtered LeBron.
Old timey.
They have like a Star Wars wipe one, like and just adds like little After Effects to it.
You got that?
And it's all digital. Why not? That's fun. We had someone in our office refer to actual cards as I just bought a new pack of analog cards.
I'm ripping open a pack of analogs.
One of the funniest things I've ever heard. It's honestly respectful.
I would love to like open cards. Like that sounds like fun.
The smell.
I would love to, if I could get my hands on like old Pokemon cards, I would do that in a heart. Like I love that. This one, like I think that's my thing. I think for me, like I think everyone who listens knows, like I love collectibles, like I love random shit. For me, it's never as much about like the expensive stuff. Some of the Star Wars stuff, like I have like a desire for, I don't have the money to do it. But a lot of it, like I actually bought something off eBay recently. I'm not going to say what it is because I think the review will be funny. But I bought something off eBay, and it's like a weird collectible. Like I want the Cactus Jack McDonald's action figure. I would
Was it an episode one Pepsi can? Did you get like the episode one?
No, but see, like I got that for Christmas. My sister got me a great gift for Christmas. It was the original game board with pieces for the Phantom Menace from Yum Brands. Ooh. For like when you could win money, and it had like Samuel, it had a Mace Windu, Yoda had all the characters, and like I got that. I'm going to frame it and put it in my office. I think that's awesome. Like, those are the collectibles that I love. So that was me with Top Shot. Like, it just wasn't – yeah, I love making money, and I could use some money. But, like, there's got to still be, like, a little bit of the enjoyment there, right? Yeah. Like, for me, I couldn't pretend to really love it.
Somewhat getting your hands on. You know what I mean? It's almost like, to me, and this is not a – this is very much a false analogy, but it's almost like with Kindle books or something like that, right? Like, I just don't like that as much as that feel of the book, even though either way I don't want to read. So it's kind of a useless argument anyway.
Top Shot.
I would just love to be someone who goes online and live streams me opening, like, a 1990 pack of Fleer baseball cards.
I love that.
This is Sandy Alomar Jr. Wow.
I watched Logan Paul open up Pokemon cards for like 3 hours and found that chart. It was fascinating. Like, I don't know what it, like, I love. I mean, we love nostalgia, and everyone, especially like I love that type of shit. But like, I was like, am I really gonna be interested in this? And then I was way into it. Like, his hands were shaking. He's like looking for the Charizard, these $1,000 packs. Like, I get that. Like, there's, which that shouldn't shock anyway. Cause what's that kid's name? Fucking Ryan opens toys or whatever.
Ryan opens or
no, nah, it's like
Ryan toys.
Cause you know what it is.
Oh, my daughter loves Ryan. My daughter loves Ryan and his family so much.
He was on GMA for the original, for the Force Awakens first toys, like 6 years ago. So that's not like, that's a new thing. Like, the unboxing, the opening is definitely still popular. Yeah. I mean,
they like repressed his aging. They're like, you can't get older or else the novelty will be gone.
Yeah, he's 50. Hey, man. Open up a new Hatchimals.
Dude, that's what he does now, right? Is Hatchimals, that's his thing? Or the egg thing? It's like the Ryan egg. It's the Ryan egg.
Yeah.
Shaking hands meme, him and Gwyneth Paltrow selling eggs for wildly different purposes.
I don't know. Like, my daughter watches it and she'll just sit there and she'll go, funny Ryan. And I'm like, hey, he's doing something right. She's almost 3 and she's loving this YouTube comment, and then the next video is like some Russian video that is to the tune of Mary Had a Little Lamb. I'm like, I you know, this is probably okay.
Dude, those Russian ones freak me the fuck out.
And
they're
She's not old enough to really ask for the toys she's watching him open yet, right?
Not yet.
Yeah, like, you're in the sweet spot.
She's old enough to, she has favorite toys, so she has these little figures of Bluey. I don't know if you guys have heard of Bluey, it's an Australian cartoon. It's actually really, really delightful children's programming. If you're listening and you have kids, like, Bluey is very wholesome and actually entertaining and funny for the parents. But, you know, what if I just had like a podcast where I talked about children's entertainment? But she does get Caillou popping up in the feed.
Really?
And then I go over to an iPad and just flip through that, because we're not doing Caillou. But she has like favorite toys, which she gravitates to, but they're not really from like Ryan's toy review. I don't know. Look, I think it's good. Like, that whole family they've made an industry out of it, and they're very successful, which kudos to them, because the kids like it. If the kids like it, then who am I to argue? Because kids always like everything, and that means it's good, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's, kids are right. Shout out Blippi.
She loves Blippi too. We've talked about this before. What else does she like? Oh, there's this family that plays with dolls, and they like move the dolls around and narrate the dolls' conversations and stuff. She's really gotten into that. Like, she just had the YouTube Kids app, and it just auto plays whatever's next. Mm-hmm. And I swore I wouldn't be one of those parents that just does not moderate the YouTube consumption. But the past year has just worn me down so much.
Killing you so much,
Like, if she goes off on her iPad for 30 minutes at a time before coming back and, like, you know, we play again or whatever, then like I take that time.
You need it, dude.
Watch Blippi.
Welcome to Ryan's Toy Review.
What's the actual name of the fucking channel?
He's worth like, $20 million or something
Ryan's
like that?
Toy Review.
Yeah, you're right. Ryan's World.
He's the highest grossing YouTuber, right?
Ryan's I want to say. Review. He was, I believe.
Which is just
There's got to be somebody like who's jumped over Ryan.
It's the American Dream. Just,
isn't there another toy kid?
What? There's competition?
Oh yeah, I guarantee you. I wonder.
No, there's definitely more, but I thought there might be one that was bigger. Maybe I'm wrong.
I do think Ryan's parents are in the videos, and I do think they do a very good job of producing their videos. But like, I don't know. But you know, obviously it's a business for them. But like, you wonder how many cynical copycats were made where the dad's like, "All right, Simon, we're gonna do toy reviews. I don't want to review the toys. Tell me, this is a raptor from Jurassic World. What do you think of it?"
He's number one, $38.9 million in earnings last year. Mr. Beast is number two. Dude Perfect is number three. Rhett and Link are number four.
Mr. Beast has money from other stuff, but I guess that is his income from YouTube.
Yeah. Mr. Beast turns a lot.
Mr. Beast is the guy who spends a bunch of money to do stuff, right?
Like
that's his whole thing.
His first couple years, he basically made nothing. He's like 22. He basically made nothing. He would just make whatever he would make, he would flip back for another video. So just roll over. He's worked with us a little bit through the Barstool Fund and stuff. And by all come on, because I'm an asshole. I like making fun of the idea of Mr. Beast all the time in here with KB and Nick. We've done it before, but in the end, he seems like a nice lad. Dude Perfect, Rhett and Link 4. I watch Rhett and Link fairly frequently. Mark Plyer, I've never really known how to say his name, but he's been around forever. He's like an OG. He's one of the few on here on this list that Rhett and Link are another ones. They've been around forever.
It's like a name I recognize.
Did Rhett and Link do the remix videos, or was who did the remix videos? They got popular with the Double Rainbow and then the Home Intruder song. Yeah.
They did a bunch of fake commercials for people too and stuff. They're a Daily Show. They kind of were they mastered that. Preston Arsman, I don't know who that is. Nastia, that sounds like a younger girl. She
sounds
like
an Austin Powers character.
In Mud, there's Blippi, Steven John. Number nine is David Dobrik, who barely even uses YouTube anymore, makes all that money. And then Jeffree Star is 10. Jeffree Star, you want to talk about someone who's been around forever?
Mm-hmm. Forever. It's like the first YouTube makeup person.
Who's Jeffree Star?
It's like a makeup person.
Yeah, you would probably recognize Jeffree Star.
Yeah.
All right, that's YouTube talk. Who's another one? Oh, I did. I have watched just
Casey Neistat.
I've watched so many Casey Neistat videos the last couple days.
Just looking at him, man.
Because I have that. That's my thing. I love my monitor at home. I love it. It's the ultra wide. It's probably, I would boil it down to best piece of tech I've ever owned. But I have so much room on it. And I'm like, you know what? Even when I'm doing the movie website, I'll throw movies up typically. If I'm on a night where I'm doing movierankings.net shit, by the way, 400 movies being added over the next couple of days. And also, Ken Jack and I are going to do the dumbest thing ever. We're going to do one sentence reviews for every movie.
Yes, that is going to be fun.
It's gonna take a while. We're going to do it, though. We're going to do it in batches. But I'll throw videos up on the side, usually movies, but I was like, you know what? I'm going to, I didn't have anything to watch. I'm fairly caught up on new stuff. So I've been watching a lot of Casey Neistat. And I wanted to tweet out photos so much, but I've gotten a couple followers on Twitter of YouTubers and tech reviewers that I really like. And they're friends with Casey.
That makes it awkward.
And I just don't want to tweet out his face and be mean. And I also watch enough of his videos where I just
His face is shocking.
He's a stunning looking guy. He's
very unique.
Yeah. But man, is he, in terms of editing and shooting, it's tough to top Casey Neistat.
He's American, right?
Yeah.
Every time I see his face, I just assume that guy's Eastern European or something.
No, he's very much from the United States.
It's this guy's Bulgarian or something like that, and he's going to be talking some weird pseudo accent where you can't quite nail down where he's from.
Watching his videos exhausts me because the amount of effort he puts into placing the camera on his own, it's just unbelievable. He'll go on a run, he'll place a camera, he'll run 200 yards away and then run at the camera just for that shot. He's actually exercising. But I watch all the videos. So he got me.
Got blown up in Project Power.
He got me. Yeah. Friends with the, speaking of Uncut Gems,
Safdies.
Friends with the Safdie brothers. Yeah. They're original friends, back in the day. Anyway, anything else, Trill?
No, we're doing a bracket today, right?
We are. Get a hint.
Yeah, so in honor of me acquiring a PlayStation 5, we're doing best video game consoles of all time.
Ooh, oh, that's a good one. Like that's a contentious one. Okay.
But me and only me and you can rank the PS5, right, Troll?
Ah, damn.
Unlike this filthy casual to my left here.
Damn. Fuck. GameCube number one. Okay, let's do an ad read real quick. Then we got a lot of news. This episode brought to you in part by Mac Weldon. I'm wearing Mac Weldon stuff right now. That's right, folks. They're versatile. Very versatile. You're not just going to look great in Mack Weldon, and you will look great. Like, you dress up in Mack Weldon stuff. You can dress down as well. Their underwear, socks, shirts, they all perform well. Working out, going out. I mean, you couch, Zoom meetings, whatever you got to do, right to working out, then right back home. I mean, it looks fantastic and fits anything. Dry knit, air knit. They got all the knits, all the technologies, wide range of different fabrics. They keep you looking great and feeling great. And they got a loyalty program as well. Get you free shipping for life. And then level two, by spending $200, you get 20% off every order for the next year. This is some real stuff, too. Like, this is the best. We've been talking about it for months. I've had Mack Weldon for years. They sponsored the Weekly Planet before. Mack Weldon wants you to be comfortable. So if you don't like your first pair of underwear as well, you can keep them. They'll still refund you.
Right now, actually.
Mack Weldon.
So comfortable. It's unbelievable.
I say, too, their bags are great. Their weekender bags or travel bags are incredibly durable. Awesome. All Mack Weldon stuff is killer. And right now, for 20% off your first order, visit Mack Weldon, MackWeldon.com/lights, and enter promo code LIGHTS. Mack Weldon, MackWeldon.com/lights, promo code LIGHTS, 20% off. Mack Weldon's great stuff. And with spring and summer rolling around, now's kind of the time. Now is kind of the time. News. Let's start out with Paramount Plus. CBS All Access turning to Paramount Plus. And they had announcements today, and they had a lot of them. So let's run through it. I don't want this to be like an hour long segment. Let's run through them. We'll make comments as we go. Okay, Tro, have you seen any of these yet today?
No, let's go through it.
Some of these are going to surprise you. All right, so
I'm coming in fresh set of eyes.
They talked about sports, Paramount Plus. So Paramount Plus, it's going to be $4.99 for ad supported, $9.99 for the whole entire shebang. And what's the exact date they have this thing launching? Do we know the date?
I didn't see it on the original article.
Live sports, live NFL. That's going to be a big one. March Madness stuff, CBS News, all that. CBS News on Demand, CBSN, their digital stuff. Live CBS as well in the premium. Thousands of movies, 30,000 TV episodes, all that and more. Here's what the stuff they announced today. So they talked about Champions League. They talked about Europa League, PGA Championship, Masters, March Madness, NFL, a bunch of other sports things. 60 Minutes Plus, they're going to add on to 60 Minutes if you want more 60 Minutes. New docuseries from 48 Hours. And then now we get to some of the more fictional-based stuff, the reality-based stuff. They got MTV is going to buy in on some things as well. We'll get to that in a second. But movies. Let's go to movies first. You will get Paramount movies 45 days after they hit theaters. 700-plus Miramax titles, Paramount movies on the site. So you get Mission Bumblebee, Impossible. Sonic, Rocket Man. That's some of the ones that they said. James Bond, Hunger Games, Addams Family, and the Avengers, I guess. I think Paramount was involved with, some of the early stuff. I may be dead ass wrong on that. 2,500 movies right away, but the new movies 45 days after that includes Mission Impossible 7, A Quiet Place 2. So that's pretty cool. I like that.
Finally, I'm like one of the 20 people in the world to see it. It's finally going to come out.
No complaints there. Star Trek. There's going to be more series and storylines from Star Trek. Thumbs up. Have we watched any of the newer stuff?
I've watched almost any Picard because it was behind CBS All Access. I don't have CBS All Access and have no plans to get it just for a singular show.
Yeah, so...
Well, although I'll make that same concession for Disney Plus 1,000 times out of 1,000.
Is Star Trek's like the... That's the flagship, right? Like, that's one of the big flagships.
Well, yes. For CBS All Access, it was. I think now that they're rebranding to Paramount Plus, they're trying to make that less of like the only buy-in option.
Yeah, it's a big one. It's a big one, though. Another one is going to be the Taylor Sheridan universe. He's going to have another new show, Jeremy Renner, the mayor of Kingstown. So new Taylor Sheridan stuff, Wind River, Hell or High Water, Sicario. He's going to have his own, basically, universe.
And they already have this show, his show, what is it, Yellowstone, which is awesome on Paramount Network as well.
What else? Criminal Minds, a new scripted Criminal Minds series. that show Younger, that's going to have a new series. Are you going to get the final season? You're going to have access to that early on Paramount Plus. Here's a big one. This is the biggest one. Frasier reboot. Kelsey Grammer back. Paramount
Confirmed.
Plus.
Confirmed.
How did the rights shift from NBC to Paramount here?
That's studio. That's like, the same thing as HBO Max having Friends.
Mm-hmm. Oh, okay.
Warner Brothers Studio.
Yeah. Studio. It's a studio versus the broadcast entity.
So, right? so all of NBC's big shows are just spread across not their own thing. Mm-hmm. They basically got The Office and Will and Grace.
Yep.
Okay, so that's cool.
Yeah, you can get your Office tier package. get access to seasons 1 through 3 of The Office for $9.99.
That was an unbelievable
exclusive cameos from Brian Baumgartner.
That should be the kicker of it. The kicker on the deal, right? You get one free cameo, and he's just locked up in like a fucking Saw basement, being forced to do cameos for buyers.
Look, I know on this face the Frasier thing seems like a bad idea, but I kind of like it. I'm ready for it. I just want to see what they do with it.
Dude, out of almost any TV show that has ever been, like, I don't think that Frasier is something where, like, you can't touch that. You can't reinvent Frasier. Like, fuck no. We absolutely reboot Frasier. Especially if, like, Kelsey Grammer is down to do it. David I. Pierce, I believe, is also signed on to come back. Why not?
The
Frasier's dad, who is the actor? John Mahoney.
He passed away.
When did he pass
away?
It was like 2 years ago, right?
That's does this work? Like, I'm actually like kind of looking forward to this. Does this work though?
Yeah, I mean, it works because as long as you have Kelsey Grammer and David Hyde Pierce, it works,
yeah,
right?
Like, okay, something like the dog.
Yeah, they need a new, rest in peace to Moose. And
no, that would be also a funny gag if they just replaced Moose but didn't explain it all. Like, it was no explanation whatsoever. It's like, yeah, it's just the same Moose, but it's clearly a different dog.
What was the dog's name in the show?
Fuck.
Eddie.
Eddie, yeah, that's right.
Yeah.
Yeah, well, I mean, but Eddie in-universe would have to be dead.
Like, oh, no, well, that would be a funny gag. That's what I'm saying, is like if they just replaced the dog with a different Eddie but didn't explain it.
Or just implied it's like a 35-year-old dog?
It's what I'm saying. Yeah, that'd be a funny gag.
The pet cemetery. They just do a pet cemetery crossover with Eddie.
That's the first episode. They do a satanic ritual to bring Eddie back to life.
What a misleading tweet. The revival have everything you love about the original? Literally not everything.
Yeah.
RP. Well, that's the problem with some of these. That's the problem with some of these reboots, too, is they're thinking about I think they're doing a Sex and the City reboot, where the three main leads don't get along with Kim Cattrall or Kim. There's beef there.
They
right?
all hate her.
Yeah, there's beef, and then also like Chris Noth, Mr. Big, is also rumored to not be coming back.
Which
so
is
they're saying
up.
The show. Yeah, but they're saying like, I actually think it's interesting because they're saying the show is going to be based around Carrie divorcing Mr. Big after all that hubbub in the movies, and then getting back together with Aiden. Like, or rekindling a romance with Aiden throughout the series, who is like her true love. Cause he was like kind of, you know, like Mr. Big represented the excess and the glim and the glamour of the early 2000s New York City. Whereas I think the Aiden character represents a masculine version of the lumberjack ideal that workwear and everything has been trying to push for the last 10 years, right? Like, Aiden's the Mumford and Sons to Mr. Big's the Strokes.
Wow, that is a weird comparison that actually kind of works.
Mr. Big. That's what my boss called me. He said I looked like Mr. Big. I didn't.
Yeah, I don't see that.
You don't look like Mr. Big.
But he said, he called me Mr. Big. Oh, he's like, Mr. Big, can you help me out with this? I'm like, oh, fuck.
Guy's a big Sex and the City fan.
He's
calling like anyone
also,
he meets Carrie.
Elephant in the room here.
If you're Chris Noth, though, like, do you think he has to have a lot of people who just see him and say Mr. Big?
Absolutely.
Yeah. Well, that's like, the only thing I would recognize him from. That's the only thing I would say to him.
Yeah. But also, like, I feel like when a celebrity gets too famous, people get nervous of just shouting stuff like that at them. Like, you know, the people will still do it. But then, like, he's right in that celebrity zone where you're kind of like, yeah, I bet this celebrity would like it if I remember.
Scream Mr. Big at him.
Mr. Big! Yeah.
He loves that. He's just eating. He's eating at Carbone. And you're just like, Mr. Big.
Is that P.F. Chang's just picking
Big,
up his order?
You're from from the show. You left Carrie in
my
the
wife
movie.
Loves you.
You bastard. Not on Paramount though. That would be I think.
No. Elephant in the room on Frasier, right? Can we talk about what he's going to be doing in this show? He's going to be a podcaster.
Yeah.
Right?
Absolutely. It has to be. And that's the representation we need. It's still to this day, I think the only representation we got was in Halloween, the remake movie,
yeah.
where the main guy who sets the whole thing off is a French podcaster that promptly gets killed.
Yeah.
It's fucked.
Next thing, a big heel turn here. Halo, the Halo series, will not be on Showtime. It will be on Paramount Plus, which makes sense that they bodied it over to Paramount Plus. So Halo live action finally happening.
To me, that's awesome. Pablo Schrader is going to absolutely kill that role. I could not be more confident of anything. They may be fucked up around him, and the rest of the show might not be great, but I think he's going to be a very good Master Chief.
Chiwetel Ejiofor starring in The Man Who Fell to Earth from Alex Kurtzman, who, if you listen to Red Letter Media, you know a lot about Alex Kurtzman. They rip on him a lot. He has made many very bad things, but he is like basically the head of Star Trek at Paramount. But he's been involved with some real The Mummy, Star Trek Into Darkness. Kurtzman's had his name attached, The Amazing Spider-Man 2, Transformers. He's been attached to Now You See Me 2. I forgot how much it just keeps going. If you watch Red Letter Media, though, you are very aware of Alex Kurtzman. They are very funny when they talk about him. They also have another thing. Oh, so that's based on the iconic novel and film. The series about an alien who reveals more about human nature than humans ever could. Sounds like K-Pax. Next, another one is Guilty Party with Kate Beckinsale, plays a journalist who gets in over her head by investigating a young woman in prison for murdering her husband. Let's see, what else? The Game from BET is back. Let's see, they have some comedies. Amy Schumer's show is on Paramount Plus. Trevor Noah will star in the weekly show, obviously, for Paramount Plus. Or produce the weekly show, an initial 6-episode series at looking at stories, societal landscape, etc. So spin off the Daily Show, obviously. Reno 911 will return to take us on an exclusive search for QAnon. Oh, great.
Yeah, pass.
Awesome. Sounds hip and relevant. New Beavis and Butthead movie. MTV will be a very big part of Paramount Plus as well. They're bringing back the original cast of Real World New York. They're going to do a reunion. There's also going to be the Challenge All-Stars on Paramount Plus. I know the Challenge is still a very big deal for many people. People love it. 5,000 episodes from MTV's reality. You know what that means? If you're not binging Viva La Bam the second
it's
you get Paramount Plus, what are you doing?
He just got kicked off of the jacket.
He did.
Right?
Yeah, he did.
I didn't even read into what for. I don't want to know, but that sucks.
You also got RuPaul's Drag Race, a lot of stuff.
How do you get fired from Jackass?
And he must have done something to mess. I think he fucked up his contract somehow. But he did something fucked up.
Bam's gone through it, man. Mm-hmm.
New 24/7 live feeds for Big Brother. Love Island will be involved. Nickelodeon with a huge buy. 7,000 episodes of Nickelodeon hits, new and old, which I hope that means the Nickelodeon games and sports stuff, because I will watch a lot of that. I will go back and watch that. Avatar Studios. So the universe of Avatar Last Airbender will expand into new series, short form content, all that. That's a fairly big one.
Yeah, that was a big. Yep. That one I think is going to be kind of interesting, only because it does have Brian Konietzow and Michael DiMartino, who were the original creators of the show, which left the Netflix live action one because of creative differences, which makes me think, for many other reasons, that the live action one is going to suck. But this is whatever they create. Now that they have full reign of power to do whatever they want animated-wise with the series here, is going to be amazing. I think the world that they can build out is endless, and I'm super excited for that.
SpongeBob, there's a new SpongeBob show. The Sponge on the Run movie is supposed to come out finally, which was supposed to be released a while ago. There's a new prequel series. They're doing the Rugrats revival with the original voice cast, but it's all animated. It looks okay.
Looked weird.
And there's a live-action Rugrats coming out, too, eventually, remember. Yep. Which is weird. iCarly, for those young enough, that show is getting a revival. Dora the Explorer getting a live action series. That makes sense. Live action Fairly Odd Parents.
Yeah,
that sounds weird.
Dude, no thank you.
And then a new kids Star Trek animated series, also from Alex Kurtz. I'll tell you what, A lot of Alex Kurtzman. That's, you're hanging your hat. Like Apple TV Plus, like Steven Spielberg, Disney's, they're going to hang their hat on like Kevin Feige and Star Wars. This is a lot on Alex Kurtzman.
Yeah, it's a lot on his shoulders. He can handle it. He's proven it time and time again. I mean, like you said, Star Trek Into Darkness, fucking banger. Those other ones that you listed that I already forgot, all bangers. I have a lot of faith in this guy.
Starts March 4th, so just next week. I already have CBS. What am I talking about? I'm going to get it. I already have CBS All Access. And then Workaholics, the last thing. Workaholics is getting a movie.
Yeah, that's weird. I saw that. What the fuck?
Seems like missed the boat on that one.
By like they, 8 years.
I am fine. Like let's bring Workaholics back.
I liked Workaholics. Just one of those things.
Bring back as a show.
Yeah, just have them like reconnect. You know, it's only been how long has it been? It's like probably been like what, 4 years since the final episode.
That seems like it'd be longer than that.
Yeah,
right?
I would say even longer.
No way. Has it been that long? Has been that long.
Workaholics. What was the movie we watched them? Game Over Man.
Game Over Man, which was like a weird extension of it, basically.
Yeah, it was 2017 it ended, Drew.
Yeah.
So it was a good call.
4 years.
Good call. Yeah, 2011, 2017.
I don't feel like that's enough time to reboot a series, but I do feel like the movie works. You know? Because like they're still working at the same place. Not enough time has passed for them to...
I don't know, man. With a show like that that's so like irreverent, I just don't see how that works as a movie... But because I feel like it's nice to have an end cap to a dramatic series. Like I not everyone loved the Deadwood movie. I think the Deadwood movie is pretty good, and I think there's a good end cap on the series. But like with a show like Workaholics, I don't see how you make a movie that kind of seamlessly flows into it being that end cap. You know?
Yeah, but that just means it's gonna be a road trip movie.
Well, even that's fun. Yeah, if it's not the plan for it, if it's just like not supposed to be like a conclusion or whatever, it's just supposed to be its own little separate thing. Yeah, that's cool.
How do you conclude? They already concluded it. Like, I don't know. I feel like they're just going to do a road trip and they're going to just do funny things along the way. Like, everyone loves a good road trip movie.
That's true.
That's Paramount Plus, March 4th. I'll be binging old Nickelodeon stuff. That's the first thing I'll probably do. Actually, I'm excited to see the movies they have. Like, if they're expanding the library much more than whatever CBS All Access has right now. Because I'll admit, CBS All Access I really just use for live TV stuff. I use it for Survivor and live TV.
It's pretty crazy to me with all the dollars they put in the Super Bowl advertising, they couldn't have this ready like right after the Super Bowl.
It should have been immediately ready. Yeah. You're right. Especially because like I get it if it's like it's not going to be out till August, but it's a month. They could have had it a month earlier. That doesn't seem like a crazy ask.
I mean, maybe they did the research. Maybe there's value in letting it stew. I just feel like, a bunch of people know what it is and they can go download the app on their phone right away rather than saying like launching in a month. It was like when Amazon showed that Hannah show that I think debuted over it came on after the Super Bowl or something like that. But you watch one episode. Yeah, but you watch one episode and you had to wait like 2 months for it or something. Yeah. I said, why 2 months?
Yeah, like, right. Right.
Why? Like come out now, give it like maybe 8 months. I completely get it. You need to make the rest of the episodes. 2 months, you made the second episode. I know it's there.
Better than making a full-ass bad movie like Cloverfield Paradox or whatever that was.
That was crazy.
After Eagles weird. Super Bowl? Oh, man, that whole thing was
weird. Spider-Man title reveal. There was some hijinks the other night, but the official title was released on Wednesday, No Way From Home. And that's not what it's called whatsoever. It's called Spider-Man No Way Home, which makes sense knowing that this is going to be a multiverse movie.
Yes.
That they're going to be stuck in dimensions and multiverses. The title card that was released, it was on a whiteboard initially, and there's a lot of hexes there. We know the hexes, Nexus gateways and stuff, the different dimensions we see in WandaVision. It's all connecting.
Someone tweeted, I think it was IGN tweeted, like one of the chemical symbols on the whiteboard was like it was the chemical 3D makeup of the chemical, I want to say like benzoprene or something. And so it's just like Ben, literally Uncle Ben, like on the thing.
That's interesting.
It's kind of funny. Also, fuck them kids for that goddamn like little fake out title thing.
Yeah, they did.
Because I went all the way through the goddamn blog, wrote the full blog out for the Tom Holland title. And I was like, yeah, like this is kind of cool. Maybe you're going to have like alien vibes in this. Who knows? Because of the phone home thing. And they're like, yeah, psych. Actually, now they did it. And Zendaya did one. Jacob Batalon made one, dropped one as well. Fucking, oh, fuck you guys, dude. I take this blogging shit super seriously, motherfuckers. And then I had to wait until today to get the real one, which I still think is very cool. I think
it's a cool title.
It is very indicative of what I think we're going to get here. We're going to get, I think, an expanded villain, which is cooler than anything else, because that is something I feel like we don't really take into account. The fact that the first, like, obviously Spider-Man in this Marvel, like, MCU has fought like a big villain in Thanos, but the first two villains in the first two Spider-Man movies were just regular dudes with cool tech. Right? Like, I think in this movie, like, we're going to go really deep into the multiverse. We're going to get a really fucking cool villain, and he's going to be, like, kind of stranded in this multiverse, and the whole fight is going to be, what do I have to do to get out of here with my friends? So super excited for that.
Yep.
I'm really curious how much they're going to give away in the trailer.
The trailer apparently is coming out soon. I don't know. Like, this is the thing, because the last two Spider-Man movies, they did show too much, but this is Sony. This is not Marvel. Remember that. This is not Disney Marvel. Like, Sony is going to cut the promos here. It's going to be different. Like, and I would hope they don't reveal too much, because they have an opportunity here. You have these Marvel shows. You have Black Widow. You have Eternals. Like, you can bridge the gap. Like, you don't need to give the slop away. And we know with Loki, we'll talk about Loki in a second. Like, there's all these multiverse and dimensional things. Like, don't give away too much. I hope they don't, because they did with the last one. They gave away way too much. And Sony needs to just not do that. Don't do that.
Let me ask you this. You think we're going to get both Garfield and McGuire in the trailer, or either one?
Like, at the very least, Garfield.
I think you get – I don't know. I don't think you get either of them. That's my – which I think that's a crazy – so maybe that's me putting too much stock into Sony. If Sony's smart, you don't get either of them. What you get is you get someone from that universe. You get enough of a teaser like, oh, fuck, it's real. I don't know. I get it. It's definitely tough. It's tough to do this knowing that people know that's going to be a multiverse movie, but don't spoil it. Like, don't do that. Don't show too much.
In a world where
it's fucking Spider-Man, people are going to see it.
Yeah, but it's not about people seeing it. It's about the internet buzz. That's one of the metrics that people love to pat themselves on the back for. Is how much buzz are we getting out of this? Can you clip a trailer where there's like a reveal with Tobey Maguire that becomes the next 48 hours meme?
Yeah. Well, that's what's going to happen. We're slowly just awaiting this.
My face when the DoorDash driver is late.
The thing is, though, the way WandaVision breakdowns have just – the fact that WandaVision is so big now because people are just dissecting everything, you don't need to just show maybe a tiny tease. Small tease. Make us think.
I was on like a website, like a movie website or something, as one does when they get all their movie news. And there's like some article that was like, it was like one of the clickbait articles, you know, the ad clickbaits that were below it that just like get randomly put in there. And it's like, did you know that Elizabeth Olsen is Mary-Kate and Ashley Olsen's sister?
Yeah, that's awesome. I didn't know that until you just said it now.
Is this something like a lot of people are realizing?
Yes, it is. It was trending. People were saying there are some people who didn't realize that she was an Olsen sister.
They saw like the diss video from back in like Mary Kate and Ashley days. Like they had like some diss video about Elizabeth Olsen that they did as kids. It was like in good jest one. And like, wait, what? It's almost like the Christian Bale British effect, right? It's like the most obvious thing in the world, but just seemingly nobody knew it.
I don't know.
By the way,
I mean, it is kind of weird because of the career path that the Olsen twins took.
Yeah,
it's just like quitting acting, and then the you know out of the ashes rises the phoenix of a new acting Olsen,
right?
Dominating, and I guess that is a little disarming if you are 30 plus.
They're still doing well too, right? Well, I think the twins run like a clothing line or something like that. They're quite successful.
They're extremely successful. Yeah. Like very low key success. Well, that maybe not low key, but they made a lot of money off the row and their business ventures.
Speaking of Christian Bale, when he accepted his award, that's when people always go, "Oh fuck, he's not from the United States." Golden Globes are Sunday.
Mm-hmm.
We're going to record before the Golden Globes. I always say that, and we end up doing something after, but we're going to record before the Golden Globes. Follow along on Twitter. We'll update everything as we always do. No special thing planned for the Globes.
Damn, a cool 500 mil for the Olsen twins. Shit, crazy, man.
We have an ad read from Manscaped. They sent us something, though?
They did send us something. They sent us on... Right.
I'm going to dub this over, but I'm going to play it live so Trill and I can hear it.
It's a little song for a movie we're reviewing soon.
Okay, let's see here. sponsoring the pod this week. As always, buy Manscaped stuff because it is fantastic, and especially if you're a man, a woman as well, but, you know, the ball spritzer is for, you know, going to be for the boys over here, and it helps a lot. The ball spritzer makes you feel fresh and clean, even after a shower. It's not like it's not a shower replacement. But you get 20% in free shipping with the code LIGHTS at manscaped.com. They got the Crop Reviver, a sprayer, spray-on toner for your balls. Like I said, the Crop Preserver, an anti-chafing ball deodorant.
They have a foot deodorant that they sent us with the last package, which I think was in the Perfect Package 3.0. I use it almost every day. It's amazing.
It's, yeah, you know, your stinky feet.
It's
fuck
the
you.
Worst.
Fuck those
don't
people.
Want that.
Yeah.
I'm going to spritz my balls with the spray that's cold. Yeah.
That's got to be the next one. We just keep doing Old Town Road, even though it's 2021. That's going to be our new bit.
Just saw this. Tom Holland said Sony Marvel have already worked out future plans for Spider-Man. They're not going to go into that bullshit from last time.
Okay.
That very believable thing where they're never going to work together. Manscaped Performance Package, like Ken Jack said, best buy of 2021. Get the lawnmower, weed whacker, ear and nose hair trimmer, and the lawnmower 3.0. That thing, no nicks. It's fantastic. It's skin safe. And a travel bag as well. Boxer briefs. Performance boxer briefs. 20% off free shipping at Manscaped, manscaped.com, and use code LIGHTS. That's 20% off of free shipping at manscaped.com and use code LIGHTS. It's Manscaped for making, I'm not saying winter wieners, sorry. Rest of the news. Michael Fassbender's agent working overtime. His agent decided to get him into something people care about.
Potentially.
Maybe. The Killer for Netflix from David Fincher.
And the co-writer of Seven.
Yeah.
That he did Seven with.
That's obviously. Awesome. That's awesome. Good for Michael Fassbender.
Getting a good role. I think the first thing I tweeted was like he can have one good role as a treat. And from the last, like, literally, like, what, like 6 years at this point now? He hasn't had, like, the opportunity to have a good role. He needs it. And this sounds cool. It's obviously Fincher, so it's going to be good. Or at the very least, like, more than, like, I would say at least borderline great. And good, right? At the very bare minimum. It's going to be there. And the book is apparently, the graphic novel rather, is quite good from what I was reading about it. It's like a psychopathic assassin that, like, he has like this weird, like, I don't want to say society because we're going to talk about Joker soon, but like a society with like no morals that he's trying to come into terms with. I don't know. I'm super excited for this.
What if he just engineered a fabricated career lull so he could have a comeback?
Saying I'm gonna suck for like five. I'm gonna be in just garbage for 5 years.
Yeah, because like he was in garbage, but it wasn't disastrous, right?
It was never his fault.
It wasn't, but it definitely dropped his relevancy
for sure. That's for sure.
Like, it's not like he was in a Sia movie.
No, that's also very true. But I think the thing is, you can say about all of these shitty movies he's been in recently is that like the poor reception of those movies have never been, I would say, due to his lack of effort or something. It's always been because the movie around him has been quite bad.
Yeah.
Man, like Dark Phoenix, Snowman. Like Alien Covenant, again, a movie maybe like a little bit more of a polarized reaction to, which I still kind of dug. But his performance as David, I thought was awesome. Oh, Assassin's Creed!
He had to pay well, though. I'm gonna say that, like, he probably made a lot of money doing stuff like Assassin's Creed and whatever.
Oh,
so,
yeah.
You know, like, if I was an actor, I would consider doing that. I would just be like, look, I'm gonna take 5 years where I'm just gonna do stuff that's not very good, but I'm gonna make money for it, and then I'm gonna come back, and I'm gonna do something good, and just wait. I'll be back.
Not to give too much of a tease to our Frank Grillo interview, but when we asked him about Wolf Warrior 2, that was the funniest answer he gave. When he's just like, yeah, they offered me a lot of money to go do it. Yeah. So I did it. Very candid. And I'm sure that's the same exact answer you would get out of a candid Fassbender. It's like, hey, look, when they ask you to do a movie about Assassin's Creed, like, and they're offering me like $20 million to do it, guess what? I'm going to fucking do it.
Yeah, exactly.
Imagine him reading the script for, like, imagine any Hollywood actor reading the script for Assassin's Creed, and they're like, Animus? Mm-hmm.
Altair.
Abstergo Entertainment. Okay, yeah, following. The Templar. Okay, yeah. This is good. This is going to translate very well. This 100-hour video game where you climb up towers to reveal portions of mountain. This is going to be a good movie.
How does removing Fog of War, how do we translate that to the big screen? Oh, wait, you can't. The pure fucking like serotonin release when that part of the map gets revealed is unrivaled, though.
Jared Leto, new photo. Jared Leto is the Joker. but very much looking like Jesus.
He's such an asshole, man. He's just such an asshole.
That's got to be a Leto idea.
Yeah, no, but didn't Zack Snyder already do the Superman as Jesus thing in the Batman versus Superman movie? Like, when there are multiple...
He's got the fucking shots crown of thorns and shit.
He's such an asshole. He fucking made the photographer stay overtime to do that. He's like, yeah, this is for my personal collection. And then asked Zack Snyder, he's like, hey, look, I have these private pictures. Can you publish them on your Vero, please?
I would just love to ask Jared Leto. I mean, if that was his idea, to be like, do you think the Joker is like Jesus, or is the Joker just doing that because he's twisted? Like, what's the Joker's play here? Why is he doing this?
Is there religious or is this fervor?
Is this even the Joker? Is this just like, is this him as the Joker? Like, there's many layers here.
He's so twisted, he thinks he's Jesus.
There's a very good interview for those of you who are interested in Snyder in Vanity Fair. I would highly recommend reading it.
Yes, it is very good.
Very, very deep into the Snyder cut, into like his personal issues that went into that as well. Obviously, the death of his daughter, which was horribly tragic. So I would highly recommend reading that if you're just looking for more Snyder content. But I don't know. It's just, it's a very weird situation.
It's the Something Awful Forums Joker.
Yeah, essentially, yeah.
Like, this is just the 2002 Something Awful Joker making just shit posts, edgy shit posts in 2002.
Mm-hmm. And then last thing, Magic Kingdom Disney Plus Universe going to be in development. So the rides, just anything in the Magic Kingdom, Tomorrowland, all that bullshit, Jungle Cruise.
A talking cup of Dole Whip.
Thunder Mountain.
The snacks of the Magic Kingdom, an animated show. It's like the turkey leg, the Dole Whip. Jeff? Like those are the two biggest Disney
parks. Yeah, turkey leg, Dole Whip. Famous. Shout out to Orange Bird though. The orange swirl. It's Dole Whip, just orange. Very good.
Sounds good.
They should do an Epcot movie. I don't know how they make that work, but it's just an entire movie based around. Like the big ball from Epcot having some magical power, the big sphere. Do you think they could get a do over on Epcot, they would do it over and just not do it and do something?
Have you ever seen Westcott? The plans for Westcott, they were going to build like the West Coast version of Epcot, and it looks fucking incredible. It was going to be in Anaheim, where California Adventure currently resides, and then Disney fucked shit up, and then they had the budget cut, and so then they cut that down, then they cut it down even more, and they built one of the dumpiest theme parks you'll ever see. It wasn't gross. It was just so fucking stupid.
Yeah.
The original California Adventure. Now it's all – the new California Adventure is very cool. Very well done park for Disney, but the original was bad. But the original one of the built one called Westcott, and the designs for it are incredible. Very cool. But they never built it.
I know a lot of people like Epcot though, but it's just this whole – like when was it built? Like was it built the late 70s or something? It was a very late 70s, early 80s type of park vibe where it's just this obsession with this like this futurism that like never came to be.
Right.
And now they're kind of just stuck with this park where the front section is like, look how much the world's going to improve. Well,
they still haven't updated
the back section.
They haven't updated the inside of the ball either. It's still the old shit.
The what do you call it? That'll be a plot point in a Transformers movie one day. Like the Epcot sphere is going to be something like how the pyramid was for whichever Transformers movie.
Though
that was.
They are getting a lot of new rides in Epcot. Epcot got a pretty fairly large revamp. They're getting a big expansion of Paris, the France area. They got a Guardians of the Galaxy ride in Epcot, a Mary Poppins ride. The Guardians of the Galaxy roller coaster is like apparently going to be the craziest roller coaster at Disney. So
excited for that.
Well, it the California Adventure seems cool, but like the whole Orlando Disney World thing is like they have the Magic Kingdom, and then they have a bunch of theme parks that like never really knew what they really wanted to be, and now it's kind of like just a mishmash of stuff. I don't know if that's a fair assessment, but the whole like MGM was like, oh, here's the magic of old Hollywood and the theme park, and now they're like, nobody likes that anymore. Like people don't come to MGM and it's like, wow, I want to eat lunch at this replica of the Brown Derby and have a fucking Cobb salad there. Like they go there because they want to do the Tower of Terror, and then they're like, well, I guess we got to put other stuff in here. We got to revamp this Indiana Jones live action show from 1992. I'll still fucking drink that shit though.
Yeah.
I still love it, but it's just, it's weird when I think about Epcot because I'm like, I don't know. I don't know if I'd like, you know, I'm sure there are great parts about Epcot. The only times people are like, I like to go to Epcot, it's like you go like around the world and have drink around the world there. And it's like, I'm not going to Disney World to get drunk, dude.
Just, yeah. No, that's the people. It's like, I drink around the world at Epcot. And that's why they're changing the park a little bit. Like they're adding new things and like trying to mix it up a little bit. I mean, Magic Kingdom is still my favorite out of the bunch. The Tron roller coaster will be the next reason I go back to Disney. And that is a must try. It is so fucking cool. And like the Star Wars land seems neat, and I'm a big Star Wars fan, and I enjoy going to Disney. It burned me out big time going like 11 days out of 14 2 years ago for Christmas with two families. But Star Wars land has not enticed me to go back. The Tron ride is pretty fucking cool though. Also Daft Punk, by the way, when you mentioned that Daft Punk
rest
broke
in
up.
Peace.
They
broke up.
Yeah.
So I imagine they won't be in Tron 3.
Gotta think. Although maybe just either Daft Punk.
I wonder if one of them done. Yeah, I wonder if one of them does it. It's just like, I've always wondered. I don't know that much about Daft Punk, but I've always wondered if it was like a Simon and Garfunkel type situation where like 80% of the load was carried by one of them.
From what I've read about them, that is the case. I think the taller one is the one that does most of the technical work, and the other guy's a vibes guy. He's like a vibe curator.
Like Trey Parker and Matt Stone, like South Park wouldn't be South Park without both of them, but Trey Parker does most of the stuff. But that's not saying I don't like Matt Stone. Like Matt Stone is an integral part of the voices and whatever. But, you know, it's kind of Simon Garfunkel. Like I don't know about Simon Garfunkel too much. I know what Paul Simon sounds like. I don't know what Art Garfunkel sounds like. I think he just does high pitch backing. I'm sure.
Hey, man.
I'm sure some.
It worked out. Super. It gave us some great era songs.
Yeah. All right. Let's do our movie. We're going to do we're gonna do a little different review for each one of these. I Care a Lot was released on Netflix recently. A court-appointed legal guardian defrauds her older clients and traps them under her case, but her latest mark comes with some unexpected baggage. Rosamund Pike in the lead role. Isaac Gonzalez also in it. Peter Dinklage. But Rosamund Pike, again, lead role. A lot of comparisons to her Gone Girl character, even though I don't – like, I get it. I get why. I don't think it's that similar, though. Like, am I crazy to think that –
No, it's just she's playing, like,
Yeah, but this character is, like – this character is just unrelentingly cruel, whereas, mm-hmm. like, Gone Girl at least had, like –
things push her to the edge.
Like, relatively, like I would say relatable, although it's not – sort of almost
relatable to the extreme.
Yeah,
it was like, relatable to the extreme, and obviously the whole point of the movie is you kind of flip, like you're supposed to be on her side, and then the moment happens where you flip and then you're on Ben's side. But that's like
and there's nothing redeemable
this movie doesn't happen there. This is like this is a character who is like in the most evilest and cruelest of ways has learned how to like play the bureaucracy like a chessboard.
Mm-hmm.
Which, like, I get it because I guess, like, both characters are very tactical in, like, what they're doing in the movie. But I just, like, I get the comparisons. But I thought this character was just straight up, like, evil.
So this movie comes down to a big thing. A big thing. And that comes down to the ending, the last third of the movie. That's where people get hung up. I think a lot of people who don't even like the movie loved the first, at least enjoyed the first third or two-thirds or half of the movie. And the ending for some, I keep seeing the same term. It's
fizzle out.
A suspension of disbelief.
Mm.
That's what I see a lot of people saying. There needs to be a suspension of disbelief. And we won't do full spoilers here because I think it's new enough. And I want people to kind of form a thought and opinion and just watch, because this is the most polarizing we've seen review-wise, especially from our scores.
All over the map.
Yeah, even though Uncut Gems, our audience liked Uncut Gems quite a bit, but overall, people, Uncut Gems were very split. This one tanked on Rotten Tomatoes, audience score, and there's definitely a little bit of political reasons to that as well.
Yes, for sure.
For sure, but on our, for example, the LCB Reddit and some of like the threads people have, it's not. It's more just based off the movie itself. So we won't get into that. I don't give a fuck. I'm not going to get into that. Sorry. Just what we do. But the suspension of disbelief is a big thing that many people had. So I'm going to read some of just the comments after we kind of give our initial thoughts. But I liked it. I thought Rosamund Pike was incredible. Her Amy Dunn in Gone Girl is one of my favorite characters ever in a movie, just because it's so fucked up. It's twisted. There you go. And I thought her character in this was maybe not as great, but very, very solid. I don't know if I liked it as much the second time, where I really broke it down and watched it intently. I dropped the 2 points, but I still gave it an 84. I don't know. I like the ending, and I get the comps a little bit. It is ridiculous. I think, again, without spoiling too much on this, like, the mafia is another thing people bring up. They're like, this is the dumbest mafia of all time. These are the dumbest people of all time. Yeah, I get that. Like, I get it, and I think it falls apart a little bit for me. Maybe that's why it doesn't hold. I think the beginning half and two-thirds of the movie are fucking excellent, and I think maybe it loses a little bit of that steam because you kind of get taken out of it a hair, but I don't know. I think maybe Rosamund Pike just held me together with the movie the entire time. I still enjoyed this thing quite a bit, and I've had some people tell me they hate it. I had some people in the office tell me they love it. Like, I see it. It goes back and forth, but I think this movie and the way it ends and the way it wraps up, that's maybe not the intent, but that's, they kind of knew you're going to get that with this type of movie. So an 84 out of 100 for me. Ken Jack, on a little higher of a side than I am, well, with your score and thoughts.
So I think that the movie really sort of snuck up on me in almost every possible sense of, like, the phrase, because I was excited for it because I like Rosamund Pike a lot. I like Peter Dinklage a lot, but I was also hesitant because, like, both of them have had duds before. And I really, the director, Jay Blakeson, like, I don't really know him at all. I'm not familiar with him at all. And at the end of the day, I think this is such a unique and such a stylish thriller that to me really stood out in the genre of black comedy. And I think that is also kind of a problem people have with this movie, is like, they don't, I don't think, recognize the fact that it is a black comedy. They almost view it as if it's a drama like Gone Girl, right? Like, that's not what this is. It's supposed to be, like, funny and fucking weird. It's not supposed to be, like, a very serious drama. And that's why I had the suspension of disbelief with, like, the goofy fucking mafia, because it's a fucking comedy. It's a black comedy. But, and I think the biggest part of this movie's success is the same sort of reason you had, Jeff, is just that Rosamund Pike was fucking awesome. She had, like, this perfect level of evil that is just, like you were saying, cruelty, that's almost, like, hard to describe. And what I called it was corporate evil. Because, and that's, like, when they have this very extremely, like, sanitized presence when they think people are watching. And, like, this very, just constant, like, rationale for doing incredibly evil shit. And I think that plays really well against Peter Dinklage's evil, which is obviously, like, the darker side with the mafia and all that. And I also, besides both of them, to Diane Wiest, I'm not sure how you pronounce it up, fucked it up a bit bad, I'm sure, sorry. Also just made really, really great use of her screen time as well. Like, every minute she had was amazing, especially, and I won't spoil it, but there's a lucid, drugged-up scene where she fucking kills it. She's really good. And from a structural standpoint, I think the pacing is really good, and it's just a really unique concept that is just so frustrating. And I think that frustration is really the key word sort of for the movie, right? Because there's no, like, protagonist. It's only evil people who you're actively rooting against, right? And so, like, anytime they get a win, we get pissed, which I think is a good feeling for us to have as moviegoers, right? Like, that emotional level. And I just love that about this movie so much. And my only real complaint is that I wish we were given more of a reason to hate Peter Dinklage and the mob, because we're constantly reminded at every point throughout the movie the evil shit that Rosamund Pike is doing, like how horrible she is, how cruel she is, and that's why we hate her. I think with the direction, the intent was for us to hate Peter Dinklage and the mafia just as much, but, like, the only real scene we get to a reminder of that for is, like, right in the beginning when he's introduced talking about, like, the mules, like, very flippantly and all that. But, like, I think we needed to be, like, he needed to be propped up to be as hateable a person as she was. And I don't think that was the case in this movie.
I mean, I think part of why I like that, though, is there's this juxtaposition between, like, what Marla is doing in this movie is kind of, like, greasing or just, you know, going between the bureaucracy to find, like, I want to say, like, it's still very immoral. But, like, ultimately she's using the legal system to get what she wants, right? Like
she's like
greasing
the
wheel.
He's the hammer.
Yeah, like she's getting what she wants somehow, but it's kind of like under the guise of, like, just this you know, a legal system that really isn't, like, I don't know, working the way maybe it should. Whereas, like, the mafia is kind of this representation of going around the legal system or operating, like, around it or against it, so to speak.
Swimming against the current, sort of.
Yeah, and so like one is like you had this, you know, you had this person who was kind of like using the system to his advantage, but then she was playing off like a group of people who historically have tried to operate outside the law or whatever. Like, so I thought that was really interesting. I give it an 80. I liked it a lot. Like, I mean, it's a solid film. It's it's definitely dark. It didn't really remind me of Succession, but I was reading some reviews and the responses kind of remind me of Succession in terms of like listening to people who don't like Succession when they talk about like, well, every character's hateable. Like, I don't understand why people don't like that. And like, that's kind of,
she's hateable.
That's the, yeah. And nobody's really likable in this movie, but that's why it's a comedy, right? Is like, mm-hmm. it's trying to highlight like just this world that exists, and maybe it is a hyperbole in some sense of it, but it's certainly like people are like doing this, and it's like drawing it out to the extreme to that's kind of what comedy is in this sense. Mm-hmm. That's kind of what black comedy is. That's kind of what Succession does at a lot of different points. Like, a lot of the jokes of like Succession are like, well, what's the one where they're trying to craft a slogan where it's like, we see you, or we what is the one where they like come up with the grammatically incorrect, we're there for you, or we're here, we're here you, or something like that, where it's like,
we're here for you.
Yeah. Which is like, it's stupid, but like, it's just a little bit dumber than the shit you've seen on TV before. And that's why it works so well as comedy. And I kind of think like the unlikability in terms of the characters in this was like, that's necessary for the movie, mm-hmm. in order to do thing. So like, a lot of the criticism kind of seemed to fall in that category where I feel like a lot of the ways that, you know, when we talk about like the criticism of comic book movies and the ways like entertainment has been digested, is that like people really want to latch on to a moral and ethical a protagonist who is virtuous or whatever like that, and like that kind of anchors them in the movie. And the whole argument is that like movies don't all have to have that perspective. I think it's great to have a protagonist that is virtuous. Like, that makes for certain types of movies that we do enjoy. But like, in this case, like, and I could just be inventing a person I'm getting mad at, but like,
no, you're not. Trust me.
It's like, you don't have to like anybody in this movie. That's not the point. But I also like, I also understand like why you just don't like this movie at all, in the same way I understood the arguments for Uncut Gems. Like, there are people that just hate Uncut Gems, and I completely get it, because it's not filmmaking that's intended for a very wide audience in terms of just the general pleasurability of the viewing experience. And I thought there were a few brutal moments in this movie that kind of hammered that home, but like, overall I enjoyed it.
Yeah. Let me read a couple of the comments here. This is one of our longer, like, it wasn't a ton of replies, but there was like very well thought out. I can't get to everyone. I'm sorry, but I'll read two off the top that got upvoted the most, because I thought they had interesting points on maybe the opposite end of what we thought. This is from where is it? Wally from the movie Wally.
Wally.
After thinking more about the movie, I really dislike I Care a Lot. I think it falls into that bad screenwriting trap of when the writer does a great job creating a villain as the main character, but then can't stop themselves from falling in love with that character, which that's a generally a very interesting point, like even beyond this movie, when it comes to these types of characters. The only way the second half of this movie makes sense is if we're supposed to root for Marla to win, which is an impossible sell after making her worse than the mobsters in the first half. I have no issue with having a villain as the main character. The reason it works in a movie like Wolf of Wall Street is because Scorsese never forgets that Belfour is the villain of the movie. So that's more of like the commentary there is, there's a little spoiler really at the end, so I'm not going to read the rest of it, but I get that point there. I can see that, right?
But that's the issue I have, not even just with that, because I think he brings up a better point than I think most of the replies, like even I've seen on Twitter and shit, because everyone's like, this movie glorifies abusing the elderly. This movie like does like this person is made out to be a good person. She's not. I feel like throughout the movie from start to finish, like Rosamund Pike is the bad guy. That is very clear cut. Very cut and dry. She's never the good guy. You're rooting against her 24/7 no matter what. It's like her battle versus another bad guy. And I think that is the problem, again, where I even dock points. where I think they really needed to build up the mob to be an equally hateable force or an equal force to root against, because that's where I think kind of people fall into that, right? They think that you're supposed to root for Pike because you're kind of put up against another enemy that isn't seen as like an equal, right? And that's where I think that's still kind of the problem where people fall into a trap for.
What did the movie do specifically, like, I don't know, just for discussion to try to make us, I mean, because I get that point, but like, what were the tactics to try to get us to like the villain? Was it just the, I don't know.
I never liked her. Like the entire movie, I wanted her to fail.
I kind of get that. I don't know. I hated her the entire time, but I understand, like, you know. Different perspectives on things.
Yeah, I don't know. I get his point is better as like the two main of a focus on a villain. But again, with a black comedy, I think that's kind of the point, right? Like that is kind of the idea behind it. And maybe it didn't. And I think this is one of the very big movies where I will 100% understand if someone doesn't like it. But I think for people who click with this movie, it will really, really click. But if it doesn't, it really, really won't. You know what I mean? It's harder to describe it other than that.
Suspension of disbelief is the thing I keep seeing, though. That is like the main point that I see. Though. Yeah, is that like, you know, about what she does at the end, with like their company things. Again, I don't
like you're watching Death of Stalin, watching like fucking Steve Buscemi talking in a broken Italian accent. Like you have no suspension for disbelief there, but like it's an issue with this movie that I don't get.
Yeah, that seems to be kind of the main gripe from at least the ending. The ending is, again, it's polarizing. So the Uncut Gems comparison to me is funny because I see it less with Uncut Gems. I can see this one because I do I get what's being I understand the argument being made here with the end, but it almost just made me angrier about people who don't like Uncut Gems because the ending is so like it's such a fuck you. But yeah.
Well, the ending.
I get why it's. I'm not trying. I know it's weird because we've been spoiling things so much recently and like just getting into it. But I feel like this one, people are just kind of slowly picking up on it. So I want to kind of avoid doing a full on just spoiler. And I don't. I'm just not going to do a break right now. I don't know. It may not make sense to you, and if it doesn't, that's totally fair. But I get the comparisons directly. But I don't know. Uncut Gems was very justifiable in everything I thought it did. I would always stick by that.
I would get that comparison and also just the comparison as far as just the polarizing response, in which so I think people mostly either really liked it or just really disliked it. You know what I mean? And I really think it comes down to the fact that if you're able to hit that suspension of disbelief, which I think I was, and I don't think that's an achievement. That's just like my own personal taste. I'm able to I do that, and if you're not, that's not a problem either. But I think if you are, you really click with this, and I honestly did because, again, I had never had any issue thinking she was supposed to be the good guy. I was never rooting for her. And I always think throughout the entire movie, all I wanted was to see her fuck up and lose. I was actively rooting 100% of the time for her to lose. And it made me feel more than any other movie I could think recently has. And that all I was fucking like clenching my ass cheeks in anger. You know what I mean? I'm sitting there fucking fuming. And not many movies can make you angry like that. Not that I was angry at how bad the movie was. I was angry because this movie was making me feel that way in like a purposeful way, you know?
I think part of it too
is like you know, a lot of the signifiers and like traditional movie tropes for like this person's supposed to be the bad person or the bad character or whatever were just not here, right? And so like maybe that's kind of what Kinjak was getting back to, like the corporate evil or like the suited up evil or like this, you know, glamorous version of evil that, you know, isn't necessarily like as apparent in terms of like outwardly projecting mannerisms, but it's like the intents and the machinations behind the scenes and the actions and all that stuff. Like, I don't know. I mean, it's something to think about. I mean, does that make sense?
Yeah.
Andy Mack, another one of our commenters, brought up an interesting point, talked about the ending and said it's not as much the very ending, but the stuff that leads up to the very ending. Views it as a saving grace. Which I think that's probably the better way to put it. I think when people say the ending, there's like kind of the build up to how this movie wraps is where people kind of lost their belief or following of it. Another one, Cavs_Junior_19_2016, fuck yeah, said, I think he said this one's a little lower than Uncut Gems for me because where the latter's plot is pretty straightforward and believable, I Care A Lot does go to some lengths to get to kind of how it wraps. I didn't find them to be that distracting to my viewing the movie, but some did, and to quote a great mind, that's totally fair. Hello.
But Uncut Gems is a drama. It's not a black comedy, right?
Yeah, that's another interesting debate with all this, is how much to, because black comedy, like, is the idea of a black comedy subjective? Like, how much do you have to go into the comedy aspect of it for it to, because, like, you brought up Death of Stalin. Death of Stalin is unapologetically a black
and
comedy.
And very clear.
That is, like, the definition of it. So I can see kind of where the lines are blurred a bit here. And some people have said, like, I'd almost rather it be a straight-on drama thriller.
Yeah, so like, if they were to drop the entire black comedy aspect of it and do it in a full drama, I think maybe people would like it maybe more, or maybe even less. I really don't know at this point. But I think maybe if they leaned more into the comedic aspect of the black comedy, people would be able to, you know, identify easier, right? I feel like it's hard for people to kind of grasp onto what exactly the vibe is.
Big difference from our audience. Trill, 80, and myself an 84. Kenjack, 90. Audience, 63. We don't get that often. Right down the middle. Not really down the middle. Lower than that. Higher than that, technically, because the 50 is the middle. But lower for the audience, which is rare for us. The director, Jay Blankenship, also did the movie The Fifth Wave with Chloe Grace Moretz, which is a really fucking bad movie. That came out in 2016. That's a bad movie. I Care a Lot is on Netflix right now. I think even if you – I would say – I think people who don't like it maybe even suggest. It's an experience, and it's something that you're going to want to talk to people about.
That's for sure.
And they know what that fucking rules, whether you like it or not. We love that with movies. Now this one. fuck. The Silk Road. I actively dislike this movie more and more every day, but love it more and more at the same time.
It's not the Silk Road, by the way. It's just Silk Road.
I know, but it's hard for me to say that because it is just Silk
the
Road.
The Silk Road is like a 1998 Japanese film. I just looked it up.
Based on a true story, though, they also did say in the beginning, based on true story, except for the things that we made up.
Yeah, classic bad movie line.
The true story of Ross Ulbricht, the charismatic young tech mastermind who unleashed the dark net website Silk Road, a website you can buy and sell drugs, and corrupt DEA agent determined to bring down his billion-dollar empire. This movie is fucking ass. This movie is so bad. I had it at a 28 out of 100. I am dropping this thing lower because the more I think about it, the more I dislike it. I am a 16 out of 100 on this movie. That is my final score for Silk Road. I've watched it 3 times now, which is insane.
Oh my God.
I cannot get enough of how awkwardly terrible this movie is. I love it. I love it. It is so stupid and so poorly put together, and the dialogue is some of the worst dialogue I've ever heard in a movie.
So clunky.
It is like, you know what this movie is? This movie is, you know the meme of the guy who's straining his face with all the veins in his face?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
That's this movie trying to seem relevant, hip, and cool about a story which really is it's a fucked story.
Fascinating.
It's fascinating. It's a fucked up story. There's many people who believe Ross Ulbricht, who got big time, when you've watched the end of the movie, he got very much life in prison, was made an example of, whether you agree with that or not, up to you. But they thought he may get clemency, thought he may be out following the end of President Trump's administration. He is still in jail. There's a deep rabbit hole you can go down on this story. But a story like that should be handled with, I thought, much better care than this. This was so fucking stupid. It was so stupid. But I can't get out of my head that image of that guy trying so hard to hold something. Like, it's like somebody really trying to poop very hard and like their veins are popping. That's them trying to create snappy, cool dialogue. And Jason Clark, I saw some good reviews for this movie. They were like, Jason Clark killed this. What the fuck
were they watching?
What were you watching here? This one blew my mind. This movie, I can't believe there are people who like this movie. This movie's so bad.
So I like this movie to the point of a 47 because it isn't, for me, so bad that it's good territory. Like, this movie for me is in the 47 range because it is more entertaining to me than some movies that tried really hard to be entertaining.
I disagree. I think this movie just was boring. It just was not entertaining at all. I don't know. Go ahead.
Look,
I'm sorry.
I think that we talked about this movie more than any other one we've ever reviewed before actually reviewing it.
Yeah.
And
we were going to review it.
Yeah. So, but honestly, I think it warrants it in this case because the movie is just that confusing and fucked up and bad. And the biggest indictment I can put on it is really this. If I didn't know that this movie was based on a true story, I would have assumed that it was fake because it was so contrived and so uninteresting, so boring and so bland and bad. And I think what it really comes down to is this, and this is just the ultimate failure of the movie, is that I think the producers had this movie, they had the script, and they had their hands on it, and they wanted to be first to market. They wanted to be the first guys to get to the Silk Road in a picture format, not a fucking docuseries or something. And they didn't care how they got there, they just wanted to be first. And what they ended up getting was this boring, really confused piece of shit with like no direction, really poor editing, and really bad acting. Like, from actors that I really respect and really do think that are good. And I don't even necessarily think that it's their fault in this movie. Like, for example, like they have some pretty decent names. Like, Jason Clarke, obviously, one of them. Paul Walter Hauser, one of them. Jimmy Simpson, one of them. Nick Robinson, right?
Yep.
Like, they're all good actors. But, like, it's almost as if every single one of them was given, like, a single take for every single scene. They're like, yeah, see what you can do with this first take. Up, oh, wrapped all, or we're all done. We don't need to try that one again. Because it's like, it seemed like they were almost doing the walkthrough for the lines. It was really, it's deranged. And the editing, especially towards the second half when he started doing like this freeze frame transition thing.
What the fuck was that?
What was that?
I don't know if you noticed that, Trill. The random transitions between scenes where it just would freeze frame and then cross dissolve.
It was deranged. It was the second half of the movie.
It was like he found, like he did it in iMovie and just like found the transition halfway through. And he's like, well, I'm just going to start adding these now.
Yeah. And he's like, I'm not going to go back and do it to anything else. I'm just going to start now and we'll see where it goes from here. Yes. It was so weird. And just everything from top to bottom is bad. And I think the funniest part from this movie has to be the ending, because the ending of this movie, here's a spoiler review, obviously.
I don't give a fuck.
The whole thing
is a true story.
Jason Clarke's the DEA agent hunting down Nick Robinson's Ross Ulbricht. And by the end of the movie, he ends up in prison, which is hilarious. But at the end, it's all like he's meeting his daughter and his wife in the prison from across the glass wall. And he's like, yeah, don't worry, babe. I got our daughter into that good school. He fucking went to prison, like DEA agent went to prison for life just to get his daughter into like a good preschool, a $40,000 a year preschool. It was the dumbest fucking thing I've ever seen. It was so stupid. So many bad lines, like the ones we had mentioned before on the pod. It smells dank in here. You cooking up some pizza with this oregano? Which is, for those of you that
smells dank in here.
Oregano is how Australians say oregano. And just, it was not caught by the editor at any point. It had this, classic American oregano pronunciation, like we were saying before. That one, like the Bitcoin explanation, the point where Jason Clarke is trying to learn the internet and he's literally just reading like Internet for Dummies or whatever. And just so much. And Chocolate Rain, of course. Chocolate Rain. Mm-hmm. Paul Walter Hauser's character watching Chocolate Rain was absolutely laugh out loud funny. It's just, but again, for me, it hits the point where if I was giving this like a very, very, very super objective rating, it would be lower. But for me, it is that it is entertainingly bad. But Trill, I understand you being much.
You say no.
This.
You say boring.
It's boring. It's just a boring movie, man. It's not. Like, it's subject matter that would be particularly interesting if you were reading an article about it. Like, I could get into that. But in terms of a movie that doesn't translate into screen in a way that is captivating.
Made for documentary.
Made for documentary. But even then, it's just like, you know, like, I don't even know if I need to see the documentary on this. I don't know. Like maybe that. You know, maybe I do. Maybe there's more to it. But I could read it. It's just like, you know, and that's kind of the tough part about movies like this where they're trying to, you know, it's almost like they're trying to equate like stuff that's going on, you know, online with some sort of a heist or trying to make it interesting like a heist movie. You know, I'm not saying it is a heist or whatever, but they're trying to put that like intrigue on it like you would in an actual like movie where something physical is happening. And I don't, you know, maybe you can do that, but I think you would probably need a more experienced director in order to do that, or a better script, or both, because it certainly was, it just was boring. It was fucking boring.
Mm-hmm. I get it, but there are enough points that are laugh out loud, funny, bad to me where it makes up for that. And it's, again, not intentional at all. And the more I saw the other scores, like from like whatever people on like Rotten Tomatoes or whatever, like giving it high marks, like relatively high marks, I was like, what the fuck? Like, you guys are supposed to be, hate this movie. This is like school project level bad. What the fuck were they thinking?
Rick Bowden, a.k.a. the Jurassic Narc.
The Jurassic Narc. Oh, my God.
Him learning the internet. Oh, the whole thing was just...
Nick Robinson and I forget who played his girlfriend, because it was his...
Alexander Shipp.
Alexander Shipp, who also was in Love, Simon with him, and they had great chemistry in
Storm,
that.
Storm, the X-Men.
What the fuck were they doing in this movie, man? They just looked like they were, like, again, it was, I think... Like, on its face, I was immediately like, why are they not, like, trying at all? But, again, I think it almost feels as if they were only given a single take to try anything. It was so just...
it fucking kills me. The whole movie fucking killed me.
Smells dank in here.
I just don't have much to say about it. It's
cryptocurrency, yo.
Yeah, it's cryptocurrency, yo. A fantastic line.
Even over the last 2 months, it feels like it's dated itself. Like,
yes.
I feel like two months ago, I'd be able to watch it, maybe be a little more tolerant. But like I haven't learned that much about crypto, but like I feel like I've learned a little more. I've learned enough about, I don't know. I don't know what I'm trying to say other than the fact that like this is something I think you're going to watch in the same way like people watch The Net in like 1994 and like their views on the internet then. Like, I think their views on, like, this version of the internet was, like, it just wasn't executed well into this movie to, like, be compelling or particularly riveting, which is obviously when you make a movie about something, one of the categories you're trying to go for.
Mm. You know what movie did that well, though? Johnny Mnemonic. You ever see that one? The cyberpunk Keanu movie from the 90s?
Yeah, dude, I've seen Johnny Mnemonic.
That one was fantastic. Awesome. That movie did.
Yeah, I mean,
no, okay, well, it definitely wasn't fantastic, but that movie was ahead of its time. It was limited.
It had
by
a
technology.
Vision.
Yes,
it had a vision at least. I will say, like, the one thing is, like, I expected this to be more like The Social Network.
Yes,
which like it was not. Which, you know, because The Social Network's good and this is not, but. I thought they were going to go the route of like trying to just like hit beats like The Social Network in terms of like making the Ross character like more, you know, along the lines of like what they did to the Zuckerberg character in The Social Network in order to make that movie work. And they didn't do that. I don't know if that's for better or for worse, but like at least you could say this movie isn't a ripoff.
Well, that's the almost more disappointing part, because that in itself, the fact that this is a very criminal enterprise, the Silk Road, compared to Facebook, much more, at least at the very point of Social Network, like that should make it more interesting, shouldn't it? This is a fucking website where you buy and sell drugs, and somehow the story of Zuckerberg's legal battle for the ownership and rights and shit for Facebook was significantly more riveting.
Yeah, but I think it is more riveting. Like I think there's something about the stakes of like the size of the Facebook platform and the rightful ownership or creation rights to it, and obviously so much has changed since that movie was made that like it brings up, I mean, it's more interesting in retrospect, whereas this is like, and that's ongoing, like that's what makes it more interesting, is you could almost make a sequel at any point in the future and just have like our old buddy Jesse just be like, smoking meats in the backyard. But with this one, it was, you know, it was done. Like there's a, you know, this guy was sent away to prison for the rest of his life. And I don't know, like I don't know if this movie, like, was a movie trying to make a case either way for him. Like, what did you guys think?
I don't feel like he was the protagonist at any point.
That's my other thing too, is I think I don't know. Like, I know, maybe that wasn't the point. Like, they're not trying to be biased one or the other. But like, there's so much to this that it just – you could have done just a whole different story like based on this.
Yeah.
Like, and when I mean based on story, I don't mean like literally use him. Like, just completely based on another story. Like, you could have made some fucked up dark web movie. But it just – even – you know what? Hearing dark web is one of the lamest fucking terms. Yes. I don't know what – like, it just – you know, who was it? It was – Albert Breer, the NFL reporter, he tweeted out once during, like, I don't know when it was. I think it was during maybe like
somebody got hacked.
The beginning days of like the Trump administration or something, like when they talked about Russia and like he was like, oh, wow, it's like the dark web from House of Cards is real. Like, oh, God. Which that was funny that Jimmy Simpson was involved in the dark web in the House of Cards.
Mm-hmm. And every movie that he, like, recently, just, he's a hacker guy.
Yeah, I don't know. It just, it's, the whole thing is so fucking cringeworthy. It's one of the most cringeworthy movies I've ever watched. And even the, and me, he hooks up with his girlfriend in the beginning because she references the Constitution. She references, like, it's like the First Amendment, and he just got, like, horny.
Yeah.
He's like, what the fuck?
Damn, she knows.
She knows about the First Amendment?
But then that Chad comes back into play later, and that Chad defends her against him. Don't forget.
Yeah, that's right. Wait, wait, it was the same Chad?
It was the same Chad.
I watched the movie three times. I didn't realize it was the same Chad. He had, like, the long hair in the beginning?
You gotta go, bro. Yeah, that guy. And that was like 2 years after the fact.
You ever seen anybody get kicked out of a party but still at the party?
Yeah, I just chilled.
It was like, you gotta get the fuck out of here. And all he did was move to the other side of the pool.
He was just walking around the house. He was just like walking all around, taking shots, ordering kits, and just chilling.
That
boss move.
This movie. Seen it three times. Let's go. I'm going to be the Captain Marvel.
I'm going to be
the Captain Marvel watcher of this movie.
Hello, Mr. Jason Clark. I'm wondering if you could take a picture with me. I have seen your movie Silk Road over 100 times. And he's like, oi, mate, no.
He's Aussie.
Whatever it is. It's all the same.
You're close enough.
I picked up on a couple more lines. Keep in mind, I did watch it intently once. The other two times have been in the background, but I've thrown him up late at night, and it's quite the chuckle. I'm done now, though. I'm out. I'm officially out on Silk Road.
Yeah, I think we're finished with this. Yeah. A good movie will come out about this sometime soon, just like Jobs versus Steve Jobs.
But what's the next tech movie? Right, you gotta figure they're like Hollywood.
One of the 9,000 fucking Bitcoin movies that are coming out, or GameStop movies.
Oh shit! That's right. Yeah, the GameStop.
Yep. And then Noah Centineo one.
I want to box into the Beatles GameStop movie.
Yeah, that's right.
I want a box out of all the GameStop movies that are coming out.
I'm just not looking forward to that.
But even that, like, that feels like that falls in the same territory where it's just like that's not an interesting enough story to warrant a movie for. Like, it's just there's not a character that's strong enough for you, like, for it to carry the movie, for someone to act in it. Like, that's what I feel like this needs. Like, that's what The Social Network had, is like Zuckerberg was this fucking, like, I don't know, like cretin in The Social Network. And like it was like, but you, at the same time, you like kind of liked him when you were watching it because the way it was portrayed, and you went back and forth.
Well, even that would work in this, like, if they weren't trying to split focus between him and Jason Clark, because Jason Clark, who gives a fuck, man? He was skimming money off the top to send his daughter to a private private fucking kindergarten.
Best part of the movie, that bear claw looked delicious.
It looked like a great bear claw.
That's the thing about these kind of movies where I feel like they're trying to, like, you know, it's like, who's in the right? It's up for you to decide. And it's like, it would be more interesting if you at least, like, picked a side. Like, that's what I was trying to figure out. It's like, I kind of felt like it lent more towards the Ross side of it, like, just in terms of, like, because it's telling a story. And look, I don't know, like, you know, I don't know, like, what the proper outcome for something like this should be, just because I don't know anything that's involved. Like,
but does it, though? Because, like, it had to drop the mic moment with Jason Clark's character. Where he's like, just remember, I found you first, motherfucker, or whatever.
Yeah. I don't know.
What?
I don't know.
I just said, I think.
Yeah, yeah, no, I agree. That's why this movie fucking sucks. This movie sucks ass. It's a shit movie.
But it's like, it's kind of like the Trial of the Chicago 7 with the Joseph Gordon-Levitt character, where they're like, at the end, it's like, you guys can kind of like him now.
You can be okay with him, right? Yeah. 16 for me. Troy, what'd you give it? Remind me again. Sorry, I was mid-rant.
I gave it about a 25. It was, you know, it wasn't 10. It wasn't 0.
You know what? I'm going to change mine only because I don't want this to be looked at on its face, because so many people are not going to be able to digest it past the face value. So I'm going to drop it down to 30.
I think that's smart.
I think it is. I think in the long run, when you look back on your life, decisions you made, like, you'll feel better about not getting this movie.
It ain't no Bliss, I'll tell you that right now.
Oh, man.
Fuck Bliss.
I mean, would you prefer to watch this movie or Happy Death Day?
Like, me personally?
Yeah.
I think I'd well, I've already watched this two times, and that's one more time than I've watched Happy Death Day.
Oh, fuck you. Happy Death Day. I'd watch that a million times before I watch
watching,
it.
So yeah, yeah, yeah. What's that song? Full House.
You know what I would actually rather watch than this?
They should just re-release the Silk Road on the Criterion Collection. And the cover art is the Sleepy Time Bear.
I dove in. Criterion had a 50% off sale. I've never had a Criterion purchase, and I purchased six of them.
My collection's like basically complete, but I think I got excited. Do the Right Thing. I think I got Yojimbo, which I didn't have.
We're bringing back 2009. We're bringing back 2009. So I completely support you guys getting racks
of Blu-rays.
DVD racks that sit on carpet that are right next to your TV.
Yes. Well, I wanted to do that. I wanted to get a big Blu-ray thing, and I have hundreds. And then finally, when I moved to New York, my mom was like, "No, enough. Throw away these cases." And I did. And so I have the Blu-ray, and I won't touch them. But the Criterion, I'm going to keep. Like, I do kind of want to put. Like, I'm eventually moving in the fall, and which, oh man, you want anxiety? Me thinking about moving my fucking office is anxiety. And I'm going to make a small, like, and I will only get, like, Criterion. Like, I'll get, like, the very nice, like, Criterion collection of like, movies that, like, I love. Like, I got, like, Seven Samurai and, like, those movies, yeah.
I got Kurosawa's Dreams because I did. Somebody had recommended it to us. Who was it?
Anthony Mackie.
He recommended
you know
it
what?
To us.
Little humble brag. That's kind of cool to say. I
got this because Anthony Mackie recommended
you know,
it to us.
Whatever. Like, I like throwing the humble brag now and then. But that one's, like, it's like, oh, yeah, did you see Dreams? Anthony Mackie suggested it to us. That's kind of cool.
Oh, The Princess Bride on here, too. I forgot about
cool.
That was a good one.
It used to be a pod. I mean, it's a pod. We reviewed the first movie we reviewed was a fucking emote. That's one of those things, like, I look back on. Like, we're interviewing, like, the Russo brothers and, like, all this, like, big shit. Like, the first movie we reviewed was the Emoji Movie.
That's right. And then Transformers Dark Knight directly following.
And we did it twice because the first time we recorded it, we didn't fucking hit record. I didn't hit record. You know, I'd rather watch this again than rewatch Earwig and the Witch, though.
Oh man, you see, that's the difference. This is, to me, is more entertainingly bad than Earwig and the Witch.
That was such a what
Earwig
a
and the Witch. Earwig and the Witch just makes me mad. Like it
spoils a collection of movies. It's if you go to our Studio Ghibli page, it's like, look at this. You just see 95, 95, 80, 90, like green butter, and then at the bottom, Earwig and the Witch.
It's the only not buttered one, I would imagine, right?
It is. And it's like not even close.
Mm-hmm. That movie's a bummer, fucking Goro. You fail son bastard.
Who's the mama's boy in Arrested Development?
Buster.
Buster Bluth.
Yeah. It just rules that Goro Miyazaki's the Buster. Yeah. The Buster Bluth of the Miyazaki family.
Oh, yep. God. Oh, so bad. All right, let's
try CGI. Yeah, maybe that wasn't a great idea.
But Cherry on Sunday. Okay, again.
Yeah, that's right.
Cherry. We are reviewing. This is me saying for sure. Don't ask me. We're reviewing Cherry, and then next week we will be doing.
Zack Snyder's Justice League.
No.
Just ask.
Fuck. What is it? Why can't I? I don't want to pull up the page. I got it here. What's the Tom and Jerry?
Tom and Jerry. That's right.
Tom and Jerry. The movies are rolling in now. By the way, I'm going to the movie theater in New York City next week, and I cannot fucking wait. Like, I'm over the moon excited.
Sir, the movie ended 2 hours ago. Please leave.
Sir, what are you doing? I just want to watch more Newbie. All right. Trill, let's get that bracket. Let's get the bracket.
All right. We're doing best video game systems. This could be a tough bracket because a lot of this is based on when you were born. It was based on when you came about to be and what you consider the best video game system. So I actually took out a lot of stuff that would
no
be
Atari
biased
Jaguar?
To me personally. No Atari Jaguar. I cut out the Genesis from the rankings because there's no chance either of you guys owned a Sega Genesis. But I did leave a couple of the old school systems in here. But most of all, I feel like this is stuff that we'll see. Let's just get into it.
Yeah, let's get into it.
You know, the first matchup, I think, I know the winner to this one, but it's N64 versus the Dreamcast.
You're right in that you knew the winner of this one.
I'm voting N64. I do have a soft spot for the Dreamcast, though.
I mostly want to do this because I want to talk about how awesome the Dreamcast was. And like the whole advertising campaign was one of my nerdiest shit. Darren Rovell, like one of my favorite advertising campaigns ever, because like it came about in the right time where it did make me feel like we were getting a new piece of revolutionary technology, and they're, you know, it was just promoted all. I think it was like 9/9/99 was the day the Dreamcast dropped. And it was just really cool, and it looked great. Like the jump from the PlayStation to the Dreamcast, or the N64 to the Dreamcast, was unbelievable. But had some good games, not as good as the N64 lineup of games. There was just something special about the N64, and there was something special about the split screen playing on a 22-inch Zenith TV in a partially finished basement.
Yep, sitting on a dirty carpet.
Yeah, sitting on a couch from 1978.
Yep.
Shout out to that Dreamcast controller too, though. Parting shot.
Yeah, with the little REM or whatever RAM unit you stuck in the middle that had the Tamagotchi pet on it. It was crazy. And also the cord came out the bottom of the Dreamcast controller. Do you remember that?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I had a Dreamcast.
I prefer the REM card. You put it in.
The 2K games though on the Dreamcast, like that felt playing those 2K games for the first time was just like, that was a leap. That felt like you were making an actual leap.
Did you have the Rumble Pack add-on for the N64 controller?
Yeah, I did. I got it with Star Fox 64. Mm-hmm. When Star Fox came out, it was bundled with the Rumble Pack. Yeah, N64 moves on. And N64 is going to be tough to beat. But the next matchup is the PS2 versus the NES.
For me, it's
so NES is the... NES is the one that started it all, but the PlayStation 2, I think, is the system that marked the change in terms of gaming going from a niche dork hobby to being something that was adopted by the masses in terms of being capital G gaming. So I got to give it to the PlayStation 2. I think the PlayStation 2, at the end of the day, is one of the most influential video game systems of all time. It sat at an interesting point, released in 2000 or 2001, I think, which like didn't come with a modem, but saw technology live long enough to eventually have a modem adapter come online to play online. And I mean, some of the greatest games of all time, I think, were released for the PlayStation 2, Metal Gear Solid, Snake Eater, like Final Fantasy X, some of those games on there. I'm sure I'm missing a few, but like there's PlayStation 2 graphics too. Like they had that weird washed out look, but they still kind of look good.
That early 2000s sheen to them. And for me, I never had an NES, so it's an easy win for PlayStation 2 regardless, like whatever is going up against. But PS2 for me is my formative game system. Like all the games you just mentioned are up there for sure. Grand Theft Auto, San Andreas, like the Medal of Honor games I used to play nonstop with my brothers, like fucking God of War, Ratchet and Clank. Like there's so many great games on PS2 that were really, and that was the singular formative game system for my childhood.
It's a title. Yeah, I mean, it can't lose here.
It went from Grand Theft Auto 3 to Grand Theft San Andreas on the same system, right? Like, it actually did. I mean, the amount of technological, like, just from the PlayStation 2 being launched to, like, being retired. I think the PlayStation 3 came out in, like, what, 2007, 2006, something like that. I don't know. I think it's one of the greatest gaming systems of all time.
I love the NES. I had the NES.
The NES
the Duck Hunt gun. Come on,
and I know a lot of people are expecting me to side with the NES just because I'm old as shit. But like, yeah, like NES was revolutionary. Like it created like Nintendo fever. Like they were selling out like hotcakes. They created a movie called The Wizard with was it Fred Savage? I think it was Fred Savage. It was one of the Savages, where it was based around him being good at video games, and it ended with essentially an advertisement for Super Mario Brothers 3. So like there's a Nintendo fever. It was gigantic in the culture. But I think like the thing about the NES is there's nothing that the NES did that wasn't improved upon or done better by the SNES, both from a game design standpoint and from like just a general looking better standpoint. And I think the SNES, all in all, did more to move the ball in terms of gaming. So maybe not. But I think PlayStation 2 moves ahead here.
Remember when the movies used to advertise for video games instead of the other way around? Fucking Chris Nolan, you bastard. Same with you, Star Wars.
Angry video game nerd. He's gonna
James
review
Rolfe.
The games that suck.
Love. Like this. I mean, I still watch Angry Video
we're
Game
Rolfe
Nerd
guys.
Quite frequently.
All three of us are Rolfe guys.
he's got to be going on like
Rolling Rock, 16, baby.
16 years of doing that.
Yeah. What was it? What was it? Cinemassacre? Was that the website? What was the site? It was like a chainsaw. That was I mean, yeah. NES. I mean, but PS2. That's a Titan. You get it with PS2 one. All right.
So the next one is the only really good Xbox, and that's the Xbox 360 versus the Game Boy. All Game Boy generations.
Ooh, all Game Boys. Oh man.
All Game Boys. Fuck. Because Game Boys. You know, they've upgraded throughout the years, but there was really nothing fundamentally different about the Game Boy from generation to generation. Like, I know Game Boy Advance looked like a Super Nintendo, but like in terms of like the concept of the Game Boy, it was like the Game Boy was about the Game Boy experience.
Which was the flip,
it
was about SP?
DS?
No. The one between those
DS
two.
DS is not a Game Boy though.
No. So it was Game Boy Color, Game Boy
SP.
Yeah, it is SP.
It was just Game Boy Advance. Game Boy Advance, and then SP. I think was the add-on name,
There was a what flip was the one Game that, Boy Advance, yeah. And there was a long Game Boy Advance.
Yeah, what's the long one then? I thought the long one was Game Boy Advance.
Maybe there were two of them.
Game Boy Advance was the long one. That was the long. Okay.
Okay. So what's the flip one?
That's the SP. That's the SP. You're right. Okay.
Yeah. So those are the two ones that I played more than anything else. I had an SP, and I had before that a Game Boy Advance. I never actually had a Game Boy Color.
I never had an Advance. My sister had the Advance. I had the Game Boy, the original, and then I had the Game Boy Color. And my Game Boy Color was the purple one that was see through.
Yeah, that was awesome.
Did you
have the light?
Oh yeah.
I got that too except the different add-on for the.
I got Advance. The Game Boy, and then this is niche for New England people. I was on a flight with a radio host, very famous radio host, like Craig and Company, on the way to Disney when I was like 8. My age is wrong on that, but I got the Game Boy Color. I remember playing that. I don't know why I remember that, but I remember that. That was like a all-time Christmas gift. This is tough because I had the 360, and I loved wrapping that fucking stupid thing up in towels when I had the, and I had the OG. Yeah. I had the first release with that shitty-ass Madden with Donovan McNabb on the cover. It was garbage. But I loved the 360. I had the removable faceplate on it. I got to put a Browns plate on it.
No backlight.
Wrap that shit up in towels, overheat that thing, melt the motherboards back together, and then there you go. You fire back up the, you fire back up the 360.
I did the same thing.
I never sent in that 360, and that thing lasted me for years. And the best part is I brought it to college and it just stopped getting the red ring. I think it was like, all right, you win. Like you've overheated me in towels enough, you win. No more red ring.
It was that fresh college station, not college station, state college. No, it's college station is
A&M.
A&M, that's right. Is that fresh state college air? So the Xbox 360, I'm going to give it to the Game Boy, but I did love the Xbox 360, a whole lot. And it was the first one that felt like I think it had a lot of influence in moving to the current generations, especially with that second Xbox update where you got like the avatar that was kind of a ripoff of the Mii or whatever. But the interface in terms of it being like an entertainment system, like that's something that Sony been trying to do for a while. I think one of the big reasons they have Blu-ray on the PlayStation 2, even though a lot of people bought PlayStation 2 for the Blu-ray, it never was a great Blu-ray player. I think the 360 tried to make that jump to be like a entertainment system. Do you remember the back in the days where you used to do the Netflix streaming on 360, but it needed a disc?
Oh, I used to do it in the early days of the stream. They used to do Netflix Party, and I used to do that with my friends in high school. Like I remember we watched Rubber. That was the first movie I ever watched. All of us got together in Netflix Party and watched Rubber on Netflix.
But the Game Boy, I got to give it to the Game Boy because, you know, I had the original Game Boy and I had the Game Boy Color and then I had the Game Boy Advance, even though I was probably like 18 and should be like doing cool stuff. I didn't play Game Boy. The one thing I loved about the Game Boy is half of the Game Boy ads and all the video game magazines were like, why have sex with your girlfriend when you could be playing Game Boy?
It made it seem much cooler. I think for me, I logged an insane amount of hours of especially Pokemon on Game Boy more than anything
else. That's why Game Boy wins here for me.
So, but for me, I think when I think 360, I think of a number of like extremely influential and legendary games to me, which is I think Halo 3, which I logged an incredible amount of hours on, especially online. I think Fallout 3 is same thing. Red Dead Redemption, I had Grand Theft Auto, Skyrim. Like, there's so many. Gears of War, another one. I remember, I had such a shitty TV. I used to play that with my play with my brothers on. And I just remember great fucking multiplayer times with my friends playing Sandtrap, Halo. That for me gives it the win by a hair. And it's only really because of that multiplayer experience, which you couldn't really get with Game Boy, with the exception of doing like fucking Pokemon duels through the land fucking wire thing. So very, very, very slim win for Xbox 360 for me.
Yeah, Xbox 360, right? Wait, no, Jeff, what do you do?
Yeah, I'm going Game Boy.
What'd you pick, Trill?
Just has bigger meaning. So yeah, you have to.
Game Boy gets through. Game Boy gets through. Beats the Xbox 360 just barely, though. Just barely. Moral victory. All right, the last matchup is the humble PlayStation 4 versus the other humble SNES. Now, this is a, you know, were you talking about a 16-bit system versus a 1,400,000? I don't know how many bits are in the PlayStation 4. What do you guys think? What do you think here?
I had an SNES as well, but I have to go PS4. I've logged.
You were probably like 3 when you had the SNES.
I mean, I had the NES as well.
You were probably like 1. You were just a little 1-year-old with a goatee. Just.
I mean, we had it for a while until I got at 64. So like I played up until that. I mean, yeah, I was young as shit. You're right. But the PS4, I've logged probably more hours on any game system than I have with the PS4. PS4, we played Fortnite on the PS4.
Oh yeah.
Which that's not the crowning jewel, but like we spent so many hours on that. But I first became good at like shooting games in the PS4, like Call of Duty for a little while. I suck ass now. But like I've enjoyed the sports games the most in the PS4. The only thing the PS4 doesn't have that the PS3 had was college football.
Yeah.
My best days of sports games were definitely the PS3 because of college football. But the PS4 has been fantastic.
Yeah.
Also got that on. I'm a dipshit and I buy game systems on launch. That's why I'm kind of happy I don't have the PS5 yet. And it always gives me issues, but I have to go PS4.
Yeah, I think that for me, more than any other game system, I think I've played PS4 the most, and it's like only by a little bit over Xbox. And that's PS4 just has, I think, out of all the systems we've mentioned so far, probably the best overall catalog of games. And
the exclusives.
Exactly, especially exclusives. And just it had a great controller setup, very easy console to put together, a great, I think, online service as well, community and all that. And I got to go PS4. And again, it also hurts that I never had an SNES. But it's an easy win for me.
And the PS4 is kind of where it was kind of the culmination where Sony had been trying to do since the PlayStation 2 in terms of bringing the whole interface and the experience together. And I think they finally got it right in the PlayStation 4, which is why I don't think it's too wildly different in the PlayStation 5. Like the PlayStation 4 was the first time that like the PlayStation 3 didn't feel right to me. I mean, it had some games and like whatever.
It's too round.
And Last of Us came out, but even just the overall experience, like it didn't feel like coming from the PlayStation 2 to the PlayStation 3. It just like it didn't feel like this was the next thing. But the PlayStation 4 with like the exclusives that were out on it, like, I mean, just recently Ghost of Tsushima, but then some of the games I liked the most on it, like you had the Last of Us or God of War, like the mm-hmm. Last of Us Remastered and the Last of Us Part 2. Some people like Bloodborne. I've sworn off From Software games forever. so on and so forth. But the SNES is one of the greatest systems of all time in my mind. It brought me one of my favorite games of all time in Final Fantasy VI, brought me one of my other favorite games of all time in Chrono Trigger, Secret of Mana, like a lot of the Squaresoft games from the SNES generation. Is you just had to be there, man. they haven't aged particularly well because you know nothing ever does in video games. But some of the stuff like you look at now, like what they're able to do with Donkey Kong Country on the SNES, like that was not a disc-based system and it looked that good, was pretty freaking amazing. Mm-hmm. You know, SNES isn't going to get through, but like, it was so sublime. That's what cemented loving video games for me. Like the game lineups, like Even like 1992, A Link to the Past, like that was only the third Zelda game, but that was like the perfect like 2D Zelda game. I don't know. Yeah. All right. Let's go back to the top of the bracket.
Yeah, we got now N64 versus PS2.
Yeah, I mean, I got a feeling that this is going to be a rumble. I'm going to give it to the PlayStation 2. I just think that catalog's too strong. I think the PlayStation 2 just had too much. I know people feel like Metal Gear Solid 2 like was a very polarizing game, but it still was like a very incredible game from a technical perspective. I'm sure I'm missing here. I'm going to look up some PlayStation.
I mean, worth noting though, I mean, the N64 was iconic and there was some crazy stuff that hadn't been done, and there was some trash on the N64 too, though.
It's like every year.
Yeah. Like there definitely, like there was some stuff and some real stuff that was pretty bad.
Superman.
Too. Superman's one of the worst games. I mean, that actually probably was the worst game I ever played. Those fucking rings, man. Just endless rings.
The N64 is really hard to get. You know, Nintendo consoles up until like maybe the Wii were really hard to get at launch. And I remember like going to the stores and looking at the games, and like Mario was really hard to get, and the launch games that were the Nintendo games were really hard to get, but there was always Mortal Kombat 3 Ultimate and Killer Instinct just sitting there, just pieces of trash.
You know what? I have a question, and it's a very honest question, and it's not in no attempt to age anyone, but what did the packaging of an N64 game look like? Because I've only ever had them. I've never gone out to purchase one.
It was a black box, and it had like cartoons. Do you remember the?
Because I'm thinking landscape
orientation.
Yeah, landscape orientation.
It had a red stripe on the right.
Yep, and then yeah, and isn't there a viral video of the kid getting the Nintendo 64 too?
Of him getting the box for the game system, not for an actual game.
Games?
Yeah, an actual game.
The games were actually very much similar to the game box itself.
Yeah. Probably the last video game generation to come in actual cardboard.
Yeah, I was gonna say, because right? it's not in plastic. It's like, because my only perception really of video games is getting them in like the what we know now, like the disc system, more or less,
have you ever seen the original PlayStation jewel cases?
No,
they were
do you mean like the small, like the PC disc type ones, you know what I mean, where it's like a small square as opposed to a rectangle?
No, they were tall boxes. So when the PlayStation originally launched, I think I remember the marketing reasons behind it is that they wanted to keep the box size similar to keep the perception that the value was the same as like the cartridge based games, mm-hmm. even though they were on CD discs.
Oh, so they were in,
they were in like tall format CD discs. And then eventually they're like, this is a fucking waste of money. And they went to the normal jewel cases or the double jewel cases for multiple disc games.
Yeah. So like that to me, I associate with PC games, like the square box, which is in like at whatever point, I guess in the early 2000s, they switched over from doing that to the rectangle box.
Well, maybe Game Boy games or Game Boy Advance games or the cartridge based ones come in boxes still. Like, what about Switch games? Do they come in boxes? Or
Switch
they
come in like the plastic cases now. It's just like it's the little tiny chip or whatever you want to call it. Just like a regular one.
I don't know. There's something about the cardboard that felt quite nice.
Yeah, see, that's for me what I always loved about PC games, because I bought a lot of PC games and they would always come in like a cool cardboard unless you got them off the shit rack.
Big manuals.
Exactly. Unless you were getting like Roller Coaster Tycoon, which would come in like the shitty little disc for $10 at the POS line in Best Buy, which I bought many. I bought a lot from that section and the same section in Target, where it'd be $9.99 for a shitty PC game, like either like a Sims that's 2 years out of date, or like Roller Coaster Tycoon, or like fucking Theme Park Tycoon, like not Roller Coaster Tycoon, it'd be like Zoo Tycoon or whatever. Man, miss those.
So the what was your vote, Ken Jack?
I'm going PS2. I think we all went PS2.
Okay. Yeah, PS2 moves ahead. PS2, like I said, it's kind of where gaming transitioned from, you know, I mean, it was still popular, don't get me wrong, but I think Madden had a lot to do with that. I think getting sports games in the hands of people who maybe have not played video games before, hadn't played video games since they were a kid, was a big part of kind of expanding the popularity of it. So PS2 moves on, and the PS2 will face Game Boy versus the PlayStation 4. Jeff, what do you think about this one?
Another tough one, because I love the PS4, but Game Boy I've logged again so many hours, I have to move Game Boy on. I've logged just so many. I did want to know on N64, one of the greatest achievements of me getting a game was renting Banjo-Kazooie. It was like the first day it came out at Blockbuster in Plainville, Connecticut, and that was an incredible moment.
Wait, this is PS4 versus Game Boy.
Yeah, but I need to note that N64. Game Boy moves on for me. I love PS4, but Game Boy, again, the hours logged on Game Boy, unmatched.
That and Perfect Dark.
Pokemon does it. Like, that's what pushes it over the edge for me.
Yeah, I think for me, it really just comes down to hours played. And then PS4 just not only is an empirically better game system than any Game Boy system combined, but just has a deeper catalog. And I just have gotten way more enjoyment out of my PS4, which I still own, than any particular Game Boy game. Although the nostalgia factor obviously is huge.
Well, the nostalgia factor for the Game Boy pushes the Game Boy ahead for me. I can think about playing the Game Boy on a road trip and get nauseous in my head. Or like when it kind of gets to like 6 o'clock and you're driving, it's like a little dusk out and you're in the family. It's like 1988 Volvo box and you're just kind of like trying to get the last bit of light in that Game Boy because it's like, you know, 7 years away from being backlit. Like, yep. It's just stuff like this. Like, playing video games on the go was just that was the tops.
What Pokemon color did you have?
I had blue.
Okay, I had red, and I also got the yellow. I can win Pika. Yeah. I had every fucking Pokemon except for a Kangaskhan.
Oh, from the
that
Safari
motherfucker! Because I didn't get him. I didn't capture him in time.
It's goddamn.
And then
Safari.
That was it. It was over.
Yep.
That was it. You had one shot. That'll haunt me for the rest of my life. Yeah, Game Boy.
So I had blue, but I was like 15 at the time. it was still fun.
All right, Matt,
you guys
finals?
Are like six and like, I play Pokemon. I'm like,
it's like the same exact thing, though. You're just like, I'm playing Pokemon.
Yeah, well, 15 is still kind of a baby, man. You look back on it, you're like, I'm still a kid.
What's Crown of Champ?
We got
PS2 versus Game Boy.
Not easy here.
I think it's easy, man.
Yeah, I think it's PS2.
I think the PlayStation 2 is the greatest gaming system of all time when you factor in just what it meant. Like, well, okay, like, you know, you can argue, like, look, you can argue the NES because the NES was like the gaming system that really popularized gaming. But I think PlayStation 2 is the one that tipped it. I think it came about at a pivotal time in the technology. And I think it had some of the best games of all time. I really do. I think the games, like, I think the Grand Theft Auto, if you think about Grand Theft Auto 3, Grand Theft Auto went from like an overhead shooter or whatever to Grand Theft Auto 3, which Grand Theft Auto 3 at the time was revolutionary because it felt like it had a lot of depth, even though it didn't. But that created the modern open world game that wasn't like Mario 64 or whatever.
Yeah.
That had missions. Like that was like the first major mission-based open world game, like 20 years later, still is a template that is very successful.
I think of games like that, and even like ones that maybe even weren't as popular, like Jak and Daxter, like Jak 1, Jak and Daxter, Jak 2, Jak 3, like games like that, like that weren't even, like you don't even think about, right? Like that's not something I immediately think about when I think of like name 10 PS4 2 games, but like that game was fucking awesome. And like it's just, there's so many games on that platform, and I think you kind of put it best in that. Ooh. I think it just bridges that gap, right? It bridges the gap of being. Go ahead.
Do you remember SSX Tricky?
Yeah. Oh yeah.
Incredible game.
The like all the EA big games.
I had that's not on this bracket, by the way.
What?
I had the Nintendo GameCube.
Yeah, the Nintendo GameCube.
Like, GameCube hit a rough spot for me where it's just like I had the other two and I was just like I can't can't rationalize getting another game system.
I got the GameCube at Toys R Us Times Square.
I remember playing, was it Super Monkey Ball? Was it on that?
I had Tricky. I bring that up because I had SSX Tricky on GameCube.
PlayStation 2 also like the best box art of all time. It was just the PlayStation Blue with PS2 on it. Like, has aged so well. All their game systems are like a picture of the game system with smoke surrounding it. Tacky in comparison. I'm sorry, I cut you off, Ken Jack, but I was remembering.
No,
PS2's the winner.
Completely right. It's just such an incredible system, and it bridges that gap of not only being way ahead of its time and influential, but in the same way that you were saying with SNES, but also just like for us, I think hits the nostalgia factor all three of us rather way more.
All right, shout out to PS2.
I just remember being at Castleton Square Mall in the electronics boutique that was down there near JCPenney's. I don't know where it is now. I don't know what it is now. But I just remember seeing that, like, that PS2 stand with that, like, that it wasn't a flat screen TV, but it was like a CRT TV with a flat glass cube on it that looked really nice. Had the PlayStation 2 hooked up. And I remember seeing the Madden for the PlayStation 2 for the first time, even though all the players looked the same size for some reason, like they couldn't size the players appropriately. It still looked phenomenal. Mm-hmm. Like, and it was the presentation. It was like the there was stuff happening behind the play calling. It wasn't like, I don't know. Like, I just felt like that was a moment. And now we've like progressed so far that like, who knows what the future is? It's a virtual reality where like PlayStation 5, I'm sure it's very powerful, but it's incremental. We don't take leaps anymore, at least leaps that appreciated to the naked eye. Like, I'm sure, you know, an engineer will tell me all the amazing things that are really going into the PlayStation 5, but it just doesn't hit the eye the same way it used to.
Imagine showing us like the Ghost of Tsushima landscape, like when we were in even like high school. It'd fucking blow our minds.
It was like that great tweet that was like, could you imagine like giving a like medieval serf a Doritos? Like it'd be like the most nacho cheddar they've ever had.
Arguably the most cheddar period.
Fun bracket, fun episode. Cherry on Sunday, Apple TV Plus. Shout out to the Russo brothers. That's it though. That's it. Yeah.
For Ken, Jack, and Jeff.
For Ken, Jack, and Trill. I'm Jeff Lowe. We'll talk to you on Sunday.
Have a good week at the box office, folks.